Imagine if Netflix, YouTube, and Hulu never existed. What would you be watching right now? Would you be watching this? I don't think so. You'd be watching this box right here. A television? On this device, instead of picking what you wanted to watch and when you wanted to watch it, the television would decide all that for you. And instead of watching a single 5-second skippable ad in the beginning, you'd have to watch 5 30-second long unskippable ads. Can you think of anything more annoying? An advertisement right in the middle of your show? I don't know if my parents were being cheap or trying to discourage an unhealthy habit of watching too much TV, but growing up, my parents didn't have cable television at all in the house. Now, in this modern day and age of online content, some of you are living perfectly content lives without cable. I know I am. But you have to understand, in the early 2000s, online video wasn't a thing. Yeah, YouTube was created in 2005, but what did that have? This guy at a zoo? That's lame. So being an early 2000s kid, you had to get your cartoons through the TV. And if your parents didn't pay $65 a month to get cable, then you didn't get the channels with SpongeBob, Jimmy Neutron, or Courage the Cowardly Dog. The only thing you got was this green brother and sister called PBS Kids. And whatever these things were. PBS Kids stands for Public Broadcasting Service. Kids. That meant all the shows on PBS Kids were government or privately funded. So the shows on PBS didn't really have any commercials per se, but they did have the same sponsorship ads that would play a message before every show. If you grew up on PBS Kids, then Juicy Juice and Where a Kid Can Be a Kid is just engraved in your memory. And also, every show would thank you, the viewer, for watching, and I think that's really nice. So, everyone watching this, you're welcome. I'm kinda glad my parents didn't buy cable, because instead of spending hours of my time watching mindless television, I spent hours of my time watching television with morals and math. Yep, a lot of shows on PBS were either educational or taught you how to be a good person. The shows I'm gonna mention had pretty crazy concepts, but the conflicts in each episode were very down-to-earth and slice-of-lifey, almost like the shows were made for children. Like in Clifford the Big Red Dog. It's a show about this girl's dog who grew up to be the size of a freaking house for no reason except for the fact that the girl loved the dog so much that he grew up to be a monster. So that means if your dog is normal sized, you don't love it enough. And it probably doesn't love you. So yeah, a giant red dog is a pretty weird premise, but the episodes were about everyday things. Like this blue dog feels bad that he tore up his owner's sweater, and his friends tell him to just be honest, and he does, and everyone's happy. Or the episode where this new dog moves into town, but he's missing a leg, and then Clifford and his friends have to learn that having three legs still means you can accomplish a lot of things any normal human can do. I mean, dog. And I rate this show a 10 out of 10. Next is Dragon Tales, the show that made dragons kid-friendly. There's Org, he's the biggest, not so brave of heart. There's Cassie, she's so shy, but so very smart. There's Zack and Wheezy and their tales of fun. Cause you know two heads are better than one. Dragon Tales, Dragon Tales, it's almost time for Dragon Tales. The show was pretty similar to Clifford. The characters would spend an episode learning everyday things like how to do a cartwheel, or they would try to make it rain so they could show their friend what a rainbow looks like. And there was also this grandpa dragon who knew Spanish for some reason.
Don't come too close, niños.
And that wasn't the weirdest thing on the show, actually. There was also a dragon character in a wheelchair, which, just like Clifford, is a good character because it teaches kids that disabled people are still people who can accomplish a lot of things. But I think it's a weird combination of two things. A dragon, a mythical beast known for destroying cities, in a wheelchair? If you wanted to stop a dragon from destroying your city, then you just don't install wheelchair ramps anywhere. I should stop talking. I rate the show a 10 out of 10. Now let's talk about Arthur. Here's some fun trivia. Arthur is supposed to be an aardvark. Personally, I don't see it. Basically, it was a show about Arthur and his other furry friends learning lessons, but Arthur tended to tackle more serious subjects than the other two shows. Like, they have episodes where DW hears her parents get in a fight and she worries about them getting a divorce, or the episode where Arthur Falcon punches his little sister, and even having to deal with someone you know getting cancer.
What? Cancer?
The character gets treatment and lives, by the way. 'Cause it's a kid's show. 10 out of 10. Next, let's talk about my favorite show on PBS Kids, Cyber Chase.
Cyber Chase, we're moving. We're beating Hacker at his game. Don't come in, we'll get him every time.
This show didn't teach kids morals or how to properly treat the disabled. It taught them something far more important. Math. Cyber Chase is set inside a virtual computer world, and this one character named Motherboard was supposed to be the queen-slash-protector of this world, but she sucks at her job because the villain of the show, Christopher Lloyd, infects her with a virus. So now these three kids have to go on adventures using math principles to thwart the bad guy's plans to save Mommy Board.
Mommy. Mom, come back. Mommy, now. We need to save Mommy Board.
And unlike all the other shows, this show had an overarching story. The kids would always get this close to saving Mother Board, but nothing they did worked. When I was a kid, I always wondered how much longer it would be until they finally saved her. And they never did. The show's been going on for 16 years, and they're still learning new math principles trying to save Mother Board. I think they're at calculus at this point. The show is teaching you slower than an actual school. What kind of a show makes you wait 16 years for a conclusion? Cyber Chase does, and it's one of the best shows ever created. 10 out of 10. One last show I want to bring up is called Caillou. All you need to know about Caillou is that I hate him. Caillou is a 4-year-old and a demon. He constantly throws a tantrum whenever he doesn't get his way. Even in his theme song, he mentions how much of a brat he is.
Growing up is not so tough, except when I've had enough.
And then he's crying like a child. Well, you're gonna have to grow up, Caillou. The world doesn't revolve around you. Now you might be thinking, James, this kid is 4 years old. Of course he's gonna be a brat. And I agree, but a big problem with Caillou isn't the fact that he's a brat, but it's with his spineless parents. Caillou's mom just lets him get away with everything. Whenever I misbehaved, you know what happened to me? I had to go sit in the timeout corner. You know what happens to Caillou? Nothing! Not once does Caillou ever get punished! It's always his mom just being like, Caillou, what you said wasn't very nice. Now go behave, okay? 0 out of 10 with the show with just the humans. I hate it. I just realized that all the shows I mentioned were animated, but there was a lot of non-animated shows that I still watched. But whatever, I could just say that these shows fit the theme of my channel. Or I can make a part 2, I can do whatever I want. Now, as a diehard PBS fanboy, I think I speak for everyone when I say that what PBS was missing was a crossover episode. How hard would it have been for the Clifford people and the Dragon Tales people to coordinate an episode where the three-legged dog finds the dragon scale, he could dig it up out of the sand because dogs like to dig, except this dog wouldn't be that good at digging. And then he would meet up with a wheelchair dragon and they could be best friends. I would have loved that. As much as I'm joking about it, as a kid, I actually really wanted a crossover episode between the shows Clifford and Clifford's Puppy Days, which is another show that follows Clifford before he was interesting, when he was tiny, so before Emily Elizabeth loved him. So there was a bunch of new characters that all knew Clifford when he was little, and the two shows existed in the same universe, so it wouldn't have been that unbelievable for Clifford to visit his childhood home, and then all the other characters who used to call him Small or Squirt would see him now and be like, wow! What the f*** happened to you? You see, it's funny because it's a kid's show and you wouldn't expect them to say that. I waited patiently for that crossover episode, but it never came. But at least I have fan fiction. George, he wagged his tail and smiled. Clifford, it's so good to see you. He nuzzled him as a greeting. Nice to see you too. It's been over 7 years since I last saw you. Yeah, it had, Clifford said happily. George turned his back to the hill. Here I come. There's no quotation marks, by the way. He got ready to tackle him. He punched George off, and they rolled down. Then, when they got to the bottom, George pinned Clifford, who was panting. The three looked at the two of them, who seemed to be having a staring contest. So they decided to go they somewhere else. Both laughed, and Clifford got off of him. He sat down and waited for George to stand up. So, what are we gonna do? The red dog said while quickly getting into a playing position. Okay, that's enough. So originally I was going to make a video talking about Boy Scouts because I was a Boy Scout, but then as I was writing the script, I thought about all the fun things I did as a Cub Scout. So here we are. Cub Scouts is something you can do before you're old enough to be a Boy Scout. It's not required to do Cub Scouts to be a Boy Scout. It's just if you're up to it or if your parents signed you up, you can do it. Now you're already pretty young when you can start doing Boy Scouts. It's why it's called Boy Scouts, not Man Scouts. You can start doing Cub Scouts when you're 7. At what point does it just become babysitting in uniform? So all you people watching over the age of 7, let me tell you what you missed out on. Unlike Boy Scouts that wear a tan uniform, Cub Scouts wear a dark blue uniform. Now there are 4 ranks to the Cub Scouts. There were some requirements you had to do to go up the ranks, but if you went to the meetings every week, you'd be fine. You didn't have to do anything on your own time. And even if you did all the requirements in the rank, you still had to be in the rank for at least a year. So basically the ranks were based on your age. When you were 7 years old in first grade, you were a Tiger Scout. The second graders were the Wolf Scouts, the third graders were the Bear Scouts, and the fourth graders, aka the really cool ones because you're the oldest. Actually, before I tell you, just guess what the mascot for the fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts is. Leave your guesses in the comment box below. Just kidding, don't do that. I don't care. We have a tiger, a wolf, and a bear. That rhymed. What animal is cooler than all 3 of those? I'll tell you. Nothing. And that was the mascot.
There was no mascot.
Welcome to the real world, fourth graders! There's no such thing as cartoon anthropomorphic animals. So if you did guess anything in the comments, you were wrong. I told you not to guess. The fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts was called Weebelows. Weeb-a-lows. Very fitting name. It goes Tiger, Wolf, Bear, Weebelows? What kind of animal is that? Apparently it's supposed to stand for We Be Loyal Scouts, cause we talk like pirates. Don't worry, Cub Scouts, I'll make you a mascot for the Weebelows. Here, it's a made-up animal for a made-up word. Use it however you like. The Wikipedia page also talked about a bobcat badge, but I don't remember doing that, so that's whatever, it's not important. I can't even remember what we did as Cub Scouts. We would just meet at some person's house. I think it was one of the kids' moms, and she just had some activity for us to do outside, and we would just play. My mom told me that she was my scout leader for a year, but I don't remember that. I do remember we talked about bike safety, and I remember I fell off my bike a lot. I still got the award, though. Each rank had a handbook that said what activities you would do, and I looked on Google for pictures of the handbook, and I found these books with gritty, serious, tough covers, and I was shocked because the handbooks I grew up with had the mascots on them, and I liked it! The old books were cute and had pictures! You're not trying to get rid of the mascots, are you, Cub Scouts? I think it's funny that each mascot gets progressively unhealthier, which is why my Weebelow mascot looks the way it does. And I think I might be suppressing this memory, but every time we went up a rank, there would be this award ceremony thrown by the leaders, and I think we metaphorically drank the blood of the mascot. I mean, it was really just fruit juice, but...
Hello?
Hey, TJ.
Hey, James.
Do you remember Cub Scouts?
Yeah.
Did we, whenever we went up the ranks, did we metaphorically drink the blood of the mascot?
I think that's just something our leaders did. Like, some leaders chose to do it and ours did, but I don't think everyone did it.
Oh, we had weird leaders.
Yeah, I guess we did.
Okay, bye, TJ. So another thing we did as Cub Scouts was go to this thing called Cub Scout Day Camp. I don't know if it was just an Arizona thing, but I hated it. Cub Scout Day Camp took camping and made it unfun. And surprisingly, even as a 7 and 8 year old, I loved camping. Really, James? Someone who sits in front of the computer all day drawing Pokemon? You like toughing it out and sleeping in the woods? Yes! Oh, yes! If you've never been camping, get on that! I'm talking about real camping, though, not this day camp. Cub Scout Day Camp was during the summer, an Arizona summer, and we would get up super early, like 8 o'clock, eat breakfast at home, and then you and your whole troop carpooled for about 2 hours to camp. There were a bunch of other Cub Scout troops that met there too, it was a pretty big thing. You were supposed to pack your own lunch, and all the other boys had really cool lunches, like Lunchables and Go-Gurts and, ironically, Subway. I was jealous of kids with Subway sandwiches, and all my mom packed me was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on wheat bread. So before the day even starts, I'm already in a bad mood. You start the day sitting in this big auditorium, but it's outside. The leaders would tell you to drink lots of water, and they actually gave all the troops a bag of water balloons, and they wanted us to throw them at each other because that would keep us moist and not die of heat stroke. But water balloons are stupid because 90% of the time they don't even break on impact. You're just beating some poor kid to death with a bag of water. Then you would separate into your troop, and there was a rotation of activities for you to do all day. We ate dinner, and then we went back to the auditorium, and some of the leaders put on a play. I mean, it was a pretty dumb play, but I was invested in the story. But then at 10 p.m., you went home. You didn't even get to sleep in a tent. Sleeping in a tent is one of the most fun things about camping. And also, the whole time, we didn't get a campfire, because it's dangerous to have fire around 7 to 10-year-olds or something. But they did let us do archery, because that's safe. Then the next day, you went back and you did it all over again. And then you would do it for a third day, too. So 3 days of this. 3 days of people throwing water balloons at you, and you can't get them back because you have a weak throwing arm. And you're probably wondering, James, what's with all the complaining? This sounds like fun. I mean, sure, other kids probably had fun. I might have been a little dramatic as an 8-year-old. One time on the second day of camping, I was clumsy and I kept falling off the rocks that I was climbing on, and I kept getting all these scrapes and bruises and they really hurt. And then we went swimming, that was one of the activities, there was a swimming pool. But just being the little punk kid that I was like, no, I don't want to go swimming. So they made me sit off to the side and they said I couldn't swim. But then later I was like, I want to go swimming now. After you swam, the leaders told you to check your shoes for scorpions, and I remember I didn't check because I hated everyone. And you know the play the leaders put on at the end of the day? It was split up into 3 parts, 1 part for each day. So it was left on a cliffhanger. I wanted to go see it, but everyone else in the troop wanted to play with water balloons. And I never found out how the play ended. The next morning, when I was supposed to leave for the third day, I told my mom that I didn't want to go, and she had to tell the carpool that her son didn't want to go because he's a huge puss. And then afterwards, when they were handing out the awards, I didn't get a single award because I didn't go the third day, so I didn't finish any of the activities. And then I never went back to Cub Scout Day Camp since, and that's why I hated it.
Hey, this is kind of like a part 2 video. I mean, you don't have to have seen the part 1 video to understand what I talk about in this video, but I mean, if you haven't watched part 1, you should. So I used to work at Subway, and to be honest, about 80% of the customers were fine. Sometimes they would do something that would just personally annoy me, like ask for a meatball on flatbread. So don't feel too bad for me. Like sometimes people would ask me, can I have a turkey with lettuce, tomatoes? Whoa, slow down! What kind of bread? Footlong or 6-inch? What kind of cheese? Is it toasted? Then we'll talk about vegetables! And every time someone brought in a list, there would always be something missing on it. Always! I never had someone come in with a complete list. I would ask someone, what kind of cheese? And they would say, they didn't specify. Well then, if they didn't care enough to remember cheese, I guess they'll get Swiss. If anyone watching is currently working at a Subway, then feel free to use these tricks. If someone asked me,
what kind of cheese do you recommend?
I would always say provolone, because it's the easiest cheese to pull apart with gloves on. Really, if anyone asked me what I recommended, I would just tell them the easiest thing for me to do. But even after I gave my insightful provolone cheese recommendation, sometimes people would still say,
I'll take American.
Why do you even ask me what cheese I would recommend if you're not going to take it seriously? Another thing that would annoy me is when people would say the sandwich was all done, but they didn't put any sauce on it. So I would ask, any sauce? And then they would be like, oh yeah, mayonnaise. Oh, why did you tell me it was all done if it wasn't? Also, the receipt machine at the store took like 7 seconds to print out the receipt. So it would be very awkward every time I would ask people, do you want your receipt? And then they would say yes, and then we would just stare at each other until the receipt printed. So what I did every time someone swiped their credit card, I would just stare off into space, and in my head, I would count to 5. And then I would ask, do you want your receipt? And by the time they said yes, it was like magic. As soon as they said yes, the receipt printed. At Subway, you only work with one other person. So if someone got annoyed and said, let me talk to your manager, I would just look at them and go, listen, I've been here the longest. The only other person in this store is a 16-year-old girl, and she technically isn't old enough to use a toaster, so I'm probably your best bet. I'm the manager. Like, do people think the manager will automatically take their side and give them free stuff? Yes, actually they do think that because it happens all the time. I would consider myself a pretty laid-back Subway employee. I didn't like to be stingy with people, even though I was disobeying the Subway formula on purpose. Oh, you want more than 6 olives on your foot long? Sure. Here, have a 5th slice of cheese. $1.50 for avocado? I'll charge you 75 cents, buddy. I probably shouldn't be saying these things, you know, in case this whole YouTube thing flops and I need a job. So I wasn't really strict on the rules. You know those fast food workers who are strict? No, we won't serve breakfast at 10:02. Get out. But being pretty laid back still didn't stop people from being annoying. So this one person comes in and asks for 2-foot-long pastrami sandwiches. And pastrami is our most expensive sandwich. It's about $10 for a foot-long. And guys, the pastrami is super good. But I wouldn't pay for it. I mean, it's good, yeah, but I'm not paying $10 for a foot-long. It's not worth it. So this guy, I make his 2 sandwiches, I ring him up, and I say, that'll be $20. And I guess he didn't look at the price of the sandwich on the menu, or he thought we still did the $5 foot-longs, because he said to me, I ain't paying for that. And this is when I was just starting out. I only had like a week of experience. And after he said that, I responded, well, shoot. I guess you're not paying for it. I didn't know people could do that. Hey, I want this. All right, that's $20. Nah, you don't want it? No, I want it. I'm just not paying for it. Okay, no, but actually, we did come up with a compromise. He told me that he had $12, so he ended up paying for one of the sandwiches, and I got to eat the other one. So it all worked out. This one time I was making a sandwich for a guy with a very heavy accent, and he asks for onions on the side. No big deal. We at Subway put vegetables in little cups all the time. I actually got a soup cup because the on the side cups are teeny tiny, and I start doing my thing, but then he says, no, on the side. And I think, oh, he's getting a foot long. He probably wants onions on half of it, but not the other. So I start putting onions on half the sub, but then again he says, no, on the side. At this point, I don't know what this guy wants. So I ask him, on the side of what? And then he screams, onions! And I never figured out what he was trying to say. This one old gentleman asks for sauce to be put on his vegetables, and normally we put it on top of the sandwich with the meat. And I didn't know if I heard him correctly because I put the sauce on and then I closed the sandwich. So your sauce would have been in the same place either way. One time this woman tipped me and Corey $40. She wasn't annoying, I just want to sprinkle in some good customer stories. Okay, one time this Native American person came in, and I don't know if mentioning that was important to the story. He comes in and asks for 5-foot-long tunas. Okay, Tyler, just me and you, let's do this. And then when we're all finished, we ring him up and we say, anything else? And he says, 7 meatballs. What? He wanted 7 more sandwiches. But James, you're Subway. You're supposed to make people sandwiches regardless of how many they ask for. Yeah, I know, but the guy could have handled it differently. Normally for a platter, you have to call in at least an hour ahead, and that's only 5-foot-longs. This guy could have called ahead and said, hey, I'm getting 12 sandwiches, so just prepare yourselves. Mentally. I mean, we had so many customers waiting in line. No, we didn't. That's a lie. It was only him. But still, this one woman, I was making her sandwich, and for vegetables, she asked for extra lettuce. So I put on a big handful, but then she asks for more. So I put more on, more, and sprinkle some on, more! I won't be able to close the sandwich with any more lettuce. And she says, that's fine. All right, extra lettuce it is. So I ended up giving her an open sandwich with a mountain of lettuce. You know we do salads, right? When I was little, I always thought if I was working at a store and someone tried to rob me, I wouldn't give them any money. But now it's like, psh, I ain't risking my life for Subway. Here, take the cash register. So thankfully, I've never had anyone pull a gun on me, but I have caught people stealing from us. I was making someone's sandwich, and this one kid asks for just a water cup, so I gave it to him. So I go back to making a sandwich, and I just hear the fuzzy soda sounds being dispensed. And I look over, and the kid is putting soda in the cup. He didn't even try to hide it. When I put soda in a water cup, I at least wait for the employees to go in the back, but I didn't even say anything. I was just like, all right, man. This guy, I totally saw him take a bag of chips, and he hid it under the counter so I couldn't see. So when I rang up his sandwich, I asked, anything else? And he said, nope. Alright, whatever. Okay, last story. I was in the back and was playing some Clash of Clans, and we have a computer that shows what the cameras see, and I see this woman who was eating there. She reached over the counter and took 3 large cups, and I did nothing to stop it. You know, I'm the kind of person that's like, the fast food employee is always right. Say if I was eating somewhere, and I asked for a chicken salad, and they said, we only have tuna salad. I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, well, I guess I'm having the tuna salad then.
You know, I've realized something. If I keep making videos about my life stories, then soon I'll run out of life to talk about. Which is why sometimes I'll agree to do a thing just so I can make a video about it later. Perks of being a YouTuber. So my mom is friends with this junior high school teacher. Kudos to any junior high school teachers watching. It amazes me that anyone would be okay sitting in a room with 27th graders and not even getting paid that much to do it. My mom was talking to her like moms do, and I guess I came up in conversation. And my mom told her that I wanted to be a math teacher, but then I became a YouTuber instead. So my mom's friend, I'll just make up a fake name for her, I'll just call her Mom's Friend. Mom's Friend comes up to me and says, "Hey, would you be interested in helping tutor some 7th and 8th graders?" Ew. I think the only reason she chose me was because, one, I'm good at math, duh, and two, I'd be good with kids or something. I told her I'd do it because 7th and 8th graders are the worst kinds of people. Unless you watch my videos, then you're cool. I'll finally get to live my half-hearted dream of teaching kids math. Now, I didn't make this video to talk about math, okay? That's boring. Before I even started tutoring these kids, Mom's Friend asked if I wanted to chaperone on a field trip so I can get to know them. Okay, 7th and 8th graders are between the ages 11 and 13, aka the worst time to be alive as a human. You're going through puberty, you're super self-conscious, no one wants to be your friend. 7th grade is just one big popularity contest, and everyone's losing. No one looks back at themselves when they're in 7th grade and thinks, "Yeah, I was alright." There's definitely some Sevies watching right now thinking, "Oh, I'm not that bad." Doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna look back on these years and hate yourself. I remember when I was in the 7th grade, I noticed all the cool kids wore really low socks. The shorter the sock, the cooler you were. So I always wore the lowest sock possible. Most of the time, you couldn't even see the socks. It looked like I was wearing nothing. That's how cool I was. Sometimes, I put on girl socks because they were the lowest socks I could find. I was so cool. Anyway, I was going to be chaperoning these kids on a field trip. They were going to the big college here in Arizona. Can I just say ASU? And this was supposed to get them excited to learn and pursue a higher education. Kinda awkward bringing me along, the successful college dropout. "Hey kids, you should go to college. It's important." I don't count, though. And I didn't know what to expect on this field trip. YouTube says my biggest demographic is 18 to 24-year-olds, but I don't think that's true, because it's usually kids leaving comments and emailing me asking to collab. Either they're the loud minority, or there's a bunch of kids lying about their age on YouTube. I walk into the classroom, and everyone's head turns. "Is that the Odd Ones Out? Oh my goodness, that's the Odd Ones Out!" Kids started forming lines, they were taking pictures, they were hugging me, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. No one cared. They were all still talking in their cliques. With all the kids I've talked to over the internet, that sounded wrong. With all the kids I've talked to, I was hoping that one, at least one kid had seen my stuff. But nope. So I just sat in silence and played on my phone. We get on the bus. I don't remember where I said this, but on school buses, all the cool kids sit in the back. Well, this time the opposite was true, because I sat in the front. We arrive at the college, I go to this group of kiddos and I say, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" And at that moment, I realized I sounded exactly like one of those adults who try to talk to kids but have no idea what to say. I was planning on them saying, "Astronaut," or "Doctor," and then I was going to say, "Well, you could learn that in college!" That's what I was going to say. "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" They said nothing. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me like, "Why is this old guy trying to talk to us?" So then I just walked away. Alright, I need a new question. I wanted to somehow bring up, "Hey, I have over 1 million subs on YouTube." But that's tacky, you don't just start conversations like that. Sub counts have to come out naturally. So I went up to a new group of kids and I said, "So, do you guys watch any YouTube videos?" And most of the kids did the same thing, looking at me like I was weird. But one kid said, "Rice gum." Ugh, ew. Here's actually the story of how I met Rice Gum. So I was at VidCon, and all of a sudden, a huge crowd of people just goes running by. And I said, "Who's that?" And someone else said, "Rice Gum." And then I said, "Oh, who's that?" And I didn't really meet him. My friend Gabe did, though. So we were given a tour of this college, and it was actually kind of interesting because it was the college that I would have attended if I wasn't trying to save money. It was fun seeing what could have been. There were other junior highs doing tours at the same time, so we crossed paths with this preparatory school. I'm guessing it was a preparatory school because they were wearing uniforms. And this one kid in the other group just pointed to me saying, "The Odd One's out! The Odd One's out!" over and over, and I just said, "Hey," back to him. And that was it, we just kept walking. No pictures or high fives. Man, why couldn't have that kid been in my group? Preparatory kids are so much cooler. So we do the tour, and I was in the back not talking to anyone. We ate lunch, and there was actually a kid in my group who did know me. His name was Connor. I think he was too shy to talk to me at first. Thanks, Connor. Where were you when I asked your peers what they wanted to be when they grew up? But he was cool, we ate lunch together. The field trip was almost over, and I kept thinking, man, I did not connect with these kids, like, at all. Well, they are only 7th and 8th graders, so it's not like I need their approval. Hey kids, I have 1.8 million subs on YouTube! It was tacky to use my sub count to get validated by these children, but after I said that, everyone loved me. I think I made a good connection with them. And okay, all the kids I tutored that were failing math, 90% of the time, they weren't failing because they didn't understand the material. They were failing because they were missing assignments. So alright, I'm about to tutor everyone watching this video. And this goes for you college folks too. Kids?
Turn in your work. Even if it's late, it's better than a zero. All right, lesson's over. We're not going to do an end card for this video
because I wanted to show you guys something. Here are all the cards I made for the plushies. Good news if you live in the States, because they will most likely arrive before Christmas. Sorry if you live somewhere else. Also, if you ordered a custom signature, you're just gonna get one of these boys. We wanna get them out before Christmas, but then we're gonna send the special ones later, so you'll get two cards if you ordered special instructions.
Bobby, what do you have to say?
Also, another important announcement is I'm going to be taking a Christmas break. I have been working nonstop on videos since VidCon, so I am in desperate need of a break. I'm still going to be posting comics and maybe some other non-animated video if I can, but this is the only animated video this month, so I guess Merry Christmas. Can I say Merry Christmas? Whatever holiday you celebrate, just wear your seatbelt.
Look at that. This is my...
I haven't hung it up or anything. It's just on the floor.
Now, you might think that since I'm making a part two of this, I must get recognized a whole lot. Like I'm some sort of celebrity or something. No. What actually happens is that I'm awkward, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but chances are you're awkward too. So when I do get recognized, we're both being awkward, together. And that stuff makes for great videos. Once you get to my level of YouTube fame, whenever I go out in public, I always have the thought in the back of my mind, I wonder if any of these people have seen me pour sprinkles over my shirtless body. I especially get worried when I see my target demographic in public. Little boys. This might be paranoia or anxiety, but I swear sometimes little boys will stare at me for an uncomfortable amount of time, and I'm just trying my best not to make eye contact. You know, I don't really have any defining physical characteristics that make me stand out. As of right now, little boys have to look at me and think, is that tall, white, dirty, blonde-haired, early 20-year-old beta male that one YouTuber I like, or am I just imagining things? It's funny I call myself the odd ones out when I'm part of, like, no minorities. I mean, I might get nervous around little boys, but when I do get recognized, it's the highlight of my day. So I don't know what I'm worried about. I should just wear a shirt that says, hey! And the odd one's out. So one time I went to Walmart and I was buying a bunch of whoopee cushions for my April Fool's video. And as I was walking down the aisle, I saw this little boy at the other end walking towards me and his face just lit up. And I thought, oh, this kid knows! This is happening, ladies and gentlemen! Here we go! Are you James? Who? And then I walked off. I'm just kidding. I mean, I did say who, but I didn't walk away. I was just messing with the kid. It was probably really weird for that kid to see a YouTuber in Walmart buying nothing but whoopee cushions. So that was fun. This other time, I was buying supplies for my 3 million sprinkle video, and I ended up going to 3 different stores. Hey, do you guys have an inflatable pool? Yeah, what size do you need? Enough to fit 3 million sprinkles. What are you using it for? I need it for a thing. So after I finished my important business errands, I felt a little hungry, so I decided to buy some pre-made food. I work hard, dang it, I deserve it. And I decided to go eat at Zupa's. Zupa's is a pretty good restaurant. They have sandwiches and soup, and they give you a chocolate-covered strawberry with every order. I'm telling you this because I want them to sponsor me. I went up to the counter, and there was this employee that said, hey man, what's up? And this is gonna be a bit of a tangent, but I just wanna say that I absolutely love that kind of employee. It's so much better than those fake fast food employees. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? Like, every time I pull up into a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, there'll be an employee that will say, it's always a great day at Chick-fil-A! My name's Mackenzie, how may I serve you? And I just wanna say, Mackenzie, 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 I came here yesterday and Brian said the exact same thing. I know your manager told you to say that. Look, neither of us want to be here, okay? No one says it's a great day at Chick-fil-A, okay? That's so dumb. So stop lying to me and give me the usual. Like, I would much rather have a fast food employee just say, what do you want? Okay, maybe not that rude, but you get the point. So now there's a random guy who works at Zupa's who doesn't even know I put him in a YouTube video, but I like his work ethic. Treat me like a person and not like a customer. Anyway, tangent over, I ordered some soup and a sandwich. Cool. I go up to the cash register. My soup is ready, but my sandwich wasn't. The girl said, did you get anything else or just soup? I said, no, I got a sandwich too. I paid for the food, but the sandwich still wasn't ready. I checked my phone, looked at Twitter. By now, the sandwich was done. The girl took the sandwich and the soup and a chocolate-covered strawberry and put it in a plastic box doggy bag thing. I was super hungry. I thought the transaction was done, so I grabbed the box and started sliding it towards me. Then she took out a plastic bag and said, oh, do you want it in a bag? And I thought, yeah.
I do. So I slid the food back over, and as this girl was putting the food in the bag, she yelled,
James!
And I was not ready for that.
Oh, hey, I mean, who?
She said, did you come here because of my email?
You sent an email?
So that was pretty fun. All the other employees were like, wait, this guy's important? There's a high chance that this woman is watching this video right now, and I looked up her email, and her name is Scarlett. Isn't that a nice name? So Scarlett, if you're watching, can you tell your coworker I like his work ethic? Also, can you hook me up with free Zupas? I never really understood how people could get nervous talking to me. I'm just some 21-year-old who likes M&Ms and drawing cartoons for the internet. I've always thought of myself as a pretty normal guy. At least, I never understood that sort of nervousness until I met Carl Sagan 42. I recently got into this game called Mario Maker, which is a game where you can make your own Mario levels and share them with the world via the internet. I wanted to find some Mario Maker Let's Players that were, one, good at the game, and two, weren't screaming every 10 seconds, which is actually a lot harder to find than you might think. But I went searching and I found these three Let's Players who mostly play Mario Maker, and they're all right at the game. I mean, they're only a little better than me. If one of my videos gets delayed, you could probably thank these three because I'm watching their videos instead of working. Also, this is gonna sound weird, but every morning after I wake up at 12, I pour myself a bowl of cereal and I watch one of their videos. So I start my day off with my Mario Maker boys. Anyway, one of the Let's Players, Carl Sagan 42,
Mushroom,
was going to Phoenix Comic Con, which was great because I was also going to Phoenix Comic Con. I didn't have a panel or anything. I just went with Jaden and her friends and we just walked around. Comic-Con was a lot of fun. I met up with a lot of people. I even got recognized at Subway. One of the workers knew me. There is this room where you could play video games, and I went up to this one kid playing Super Smash Brothers, and I said, all right, dude, let's do this. And he said, I feel like I know you from somewhere. Huh, okay. And then I totally wiped the floor with him with Kirby, and he was like 12 years old. So I had a fun time at the con, but I also wanted to meet Carl. Now, Carl wasn't going to the con because of his Mario Maker skills, but rather he was going because he's actually a scientist who studies vaccines and plants, and he was going to talk about that. So on Friday, after doing some stalking on Twitter, I found out that he had a panel at 9 p.m. Yes! Leading up to the panel, I realized that I was getting my information off a tweet and not from the official Comic-Con handbook, so I didn't even know if I was going to the correct panel. When 9 p.m. rolled around, I walked into the room Carl said he was having his panel. I saw a group of 5 people sitting on a stage, but I didn't see Carl. Guess he's not here. Oh wait, he is here! He's just the only person in cosplay! That's the guy I like! The one in the wig! As I listened to his panel, I kept telling myself that Carl was just a normal person like me. He plays Mario, I make cartoons, I shouldn't be nervous to talk to him. Why am I like this? The panel was great, everyone enjoyed it except for this one woman who I think was anti-vaccine. Once it was done, the panelists stayed around for a couple of minutes and I went up to Carl and I said, hey, I really like your Mario Maker streams. And since he talked about vaccines, I showed him this comic I made back in 2014, which I will read now. Hey folks, are you tired of hearing this? Can you believe all the horrible things doctors put in vaccines? There's no way I'm vaccinating my child. We'll suffer no longer with the anti-anti-vaccine. The anti-anti-vaccine will stop anyone from thinking vaccines are harmful or cause autism. And then he injects the anti-anti-vaccine into the person and then he flops over. Is he okay? No, he's dead. Vaccinate your relatives today. It's dark, yes, but Carl liked it, and he even said that AAV is a name of a virus, so vaccine is actually a virus. Well, actually, vaccines are viruses, so. The anti-vaccine lady was behind me, and I think she wanted to talk to Carl, so I said, okay, I love you, bye, and I left Carl to deal with her. Some of you might be wondering why I didn't say, oh, also Carl, by the way, I have 3 million subscribers on YouTube. Well, because I think that's rude. And I didn't want to flex too hard. I mean, if he did ask about my sub count, I totally would have told him, but I don't know, I just didn't want to brag. I tell you this story because I understand that people might get anxiety talking to someone they look up to. And just because I have more subs than someone doesn't mean I won't get nervous talking to them. Senpais can have senpais too. I wonder who Carl's senpai is. Then 2 days later, I tweeted out to him and he followed me back and we're BFFs now. Now guys, don't embarrass me in front of Carl, okay? Don't just go to his channel and comment, who's here because of the odd ones out? Because no one cares, alright? If you have to comment, comment, wow, great video, Carl. You're an awesome person when it comes to Mario. You just jumped right into my heart. And also, you can check out the other two that I mentioned. They're pretty good, too. So, in conclusion, is it cool to be recognized? Yeah. Will I ever get tired of it? Who knows?
Imagine if Netflix, YouTube, and Hulu never existed. What would you be watching right now? Would you be watching this? I don't think so. You'd be watching this box right here. A Television? On this device, instead of picking what you wanted to watch and when you wanted to watch it, the Television would decide all that for you. And instead of watching a single 5-second skippable ad in the beginning, you'd have to watch 5 30-second long unskippable ads. Can you think of anything more annoying? An advertisement right in the middle of your show? I don't know if my parents were being cheap or trying to discourage an unhealthy habit of watching too much TV, but growing up, my parents didn't have cable television at all in the house. Now, in this modern day and age of online content, some of you are living perfectly content lives without cable. I know I am. But you have to understand, in the early 2000s, online video wasn't a thing. Yeah, YouTube was created in 2005, but what did that have? This guy at a zoo? That's lame. So being an early 2000s kid, you had to get your cartoons through the TV. And if your parents didn't pay $65 a month to get cable, then you didn't get the channels with SpongeBob, Jimmy Neutron, or Courage the Cowardly Dog. The only thing you got was this green brother and sister called PBS Kids. And whatever these things were. PBS Kids stands for Public Broadcasting Service. Kids. That meant all the shows on PBS Kids were government or privately funded. So the shows on PBS didn't really have any commercials per se, but they did have the same sponsorship ads that would play a message before every show. If you grew up on PBS Kids, then Juicy Juice and Where a Kid Can Be a Kid is just engraved in your memory. And also, every show would thank you, the viewer, for watching, and I think that's really nice. So, everyone watching this, you're welcome. I'm kinda glad my parents didn't buy cable, because instead of spending hours of my time watching mindless television, I spent hours of my time watching television with morals and math. Yep, a lot of shows on PBS were either educational or taught you how to be a good person. The shows I'm going to mention had pretty crazy concepts, but the conflicts in each episode were very down-to-earth and slice-of-lifey, almost like the shows were made for children. Like in Clifford the Big Red Dog. It's a show about this girl's dog who grew up to be the size of a freaking house for no reason except for the fact that the girl loved the dog so much that he grew up to be a monster. So that means if your dog is normal-sized, you don't love it enough. And it probably doesn't love you. So, yeah, a giant red dog is a pretty weird premise, but the episodes were about everyday things. Like, this blue dog feels bad that he tore up his owner's sweater, and his friends tell him to just be honest, and he does, and everyone's happy. Or the episode where this new dog moves into town, but he's missing a leg, and then Clifford and his friends have to learn that having three legs still means you can accomplish a lot of things any normal human can do. I mean, dog. And I rate this show a 10 out of 10. Next is Dragon Tales, the show that made dragons kid-friendly. There's Org, he's the biggest, not so brave of heart. There's Cassie, she's so shy, but so very smart. There's Zack and Wheezy and their tales of fun. Cause you know two heads are better than one. Dragon Tales, Dragon Tales, it's almost time for Dragon Tales. The show was pretty similar to Clifford. The characters would spend an episode learning everyday things like how to do a cartwheel, or they would try to make it rain so they could show their friend what a rainbow looks like. And there was also this grandpa dragon who knew Spanish for some reason.
Don't come too close, niños.
And that wasn't the weirdest thing on the show, actually. There was also a dragon character in a wheelchair, which, just like Clifford, is a good character because it teaches kids that disabled people are still people who can accomplish a lot of things. But I think it's a weird combination of two things. A dragon, a mythical beast known for destroying cities, in a wheelchair? If you wanted to stop a dragon from destroying your city, then you just don't install wheelchair ramps anywhere. I should stop talking. I rate the show a 10 out of 10. Now let's talk about Arthur. Here's some fun trivia. Arthur is supposed to be an aardvark. Personally, I don't see it. Basically, it was a show about Arthur and his other furry friends learning lessons, but Arthur tended to tackle more serious subjects than the other two shows. Like, they have episodes where DW hears her parents get in a fight and she worries about them getting a divorce, or the episode where Arthur Falcon punches his little sister, and even having to deal with someone you know getting cancer.
What? Cancer?
The character gets treatment and lives, by the way. Because it's a kid's show. 10 out of 10. Next, let's talk about my favorite show on PBS Kids, Cyber Chase.
Cyber Chase, we're moving, we're beating Hacker at his game. Don't come in every letter. We'll get him every time.
This show didn't teach kids morals or how to properly treat the disabled. It taught them something far more important. Math. Cyber Chase is set inside a virtual computer world, and this one character named Motherboard was supposed to be the queen/protector of this world, but she sucks at her job because the villain of the show, Christopher Lloyd, infects her with a virus. So now these three kids have to go on adventures using math principles to thwart the bad guy's plans to save Mommy Board.
Mommy. Mom, come back. Mommy, now. We need to save Mommy Board.
And unlike all the other shows, this show had an overarching story. The kids would always get this close to saving Mother Board, but nothing they did worked. When I was a kid, I always wondered how much longer it would be until they finally saved her. And they never did. The show's been going on for 16 years, and they're still learning new math principles trying to save Mother Board. I think they're at calculus at this point. The show is teaching you slower than an actual school. What kind of a show makes you wait 16 years for a conclusion? Cyber Chase does, and it's one of the best shows ever created. 10 out of 10. One last show I want to bring up is called Caillou. All you need to know about Caillou is that I hate him. Caillou is a 4-year-old and a demon. He constantly throws a tantrum whenever he doesn't get his way. Even in his theme song, he mentions how much of a brat he is.
Growing up is not so tough, except when I've had enough.
And then he's crying like a child. Well, you're gonna have to grow up, Caillou. The world doesn't revolve around you. Now you might be thinking, James, this kid is 4 years old. Of course he's gonna be a brat. And I agree, but a big problem with Caillou isn't the fact that he's a brat, but it's with his spineless parents. Caillou's mom just lets him get away with everything. Whenever I misbehaved, you know what happened to me? I had to go sit in the timeout corner. You know what happens to Caillou? Nothing! Not once does Caillou ever get punished! It's always his mom just being like, Caillou, what you said wasn't very nice. Now go behave, okay? 0 out of 10 with the show with just the humans. I hate it. I just realized that all the shows I mentioned were animated, but there was a lot of non-animated shows that I still watched. But whatever, I could just say that these shows fit the theme of my channel. Or I could make a part two, I can do whatever I want. Now, as a diehard PBS fanboy, I think I speak for everyone when I say that what PBS was missing was a crossover episode. How hard would it have been for the Clifford people and the Dragon Tales people to coordinate an episode where the three-legged dog finds the dragon scale, he could dig it up out of the sand because dogs like to dig, except this dog wouldn't be that good at digging, and then he would meet up with a wheelchair dragon and they could be best friends. I would have loved that. As much as I'm joking about it, as a kid, I actually really wanted a crossover episode between the shows Clifford and Clifford's Puppy Days, which is another show that follows Clifford before he was interesting, when he was tiny, so before Emily Elizabeth loved him. So there was a bunch of new characters that all knew Clifford when he was little, and the two shows existed in the same universe, so it wouldn't have been that unbelievable for Clifford to visit his childhood home, and then all the other characters who used to call him Small or Squirt would see him now and be like, "Wow! What the f*** happened to you?" You see, it's funny because it's a kid's show and you wouldn't expect them to say that. I waited patiently for that crossover episode, but it never came. But at least I have fan fiction. George, he wagged his tail and smiled. Clifford, it's so good to see you. He nuzzled him as a greeting. Nice to see you too. It's been over 7 years since I last saw you. Yeah, it had, Clifford said happily. George turned his back to the hill. Here I come. There's no quotation marks, by the way. He got ready to tackle him. He punched George off, and they rolled down. Then, when they got to the bottom, George pinned Clifford, who was panting. The three looked at the two of them, who seemed to be having a staring contest. So they decided to go they somewhere else. Both laughed, and Clifford got off of him. He sat down and waited for George to stand up. So, what are we gonna do? The red dog said while quickly getting into a playing position. Okay, that's enough. Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? I mean, remember how it ended on a cliffhanger?
What was he talking about?
I think it was a cliffhanger.
Yeah! Big cliffhanger! It's been 30 years! Everyone wants to know what happened to that spider! The spider died, Ethan. Oh, I didn't watch it. But you got one thing right. Everyone is wondering what happened next. The first movie wasn't satisfying enough. America needs a sequel.
Who would watch that?
And then 3 years later, we can make a live-action version! Now you're speaking my language, Ethan. Everyone else, you're fired. For some reason, movie producers and showrunners think that kids are stupid and don't know what good content is. They probably think that as long as a kid's show is a cartoon and it's moving, they'll love it. Well, here's the truth, Hollywood. The cartoons don't have to move. But you do need to write likable characters in a plot that actually makes sense. The only people who know what kids like these days are YouTubers. Am I right, fellow youths? Hashtag let Pokemon go to the polls! I thought I had pretty low standards as a kid. But sometimes I'd be watching a show and even I'd think, this is weird. Why does this need to exist? Why are the animals singing? One of my favorite shows growing up was Yu-Gi-Oh! Anyway, because I'm an adult, I bought and framed 3 Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards.
And dang it, these cards are too small to even fit in the frame.
I don't even know why I liked Yu-Gi-Oh! So much. It was basically just anime characters playing the exact same card game over and over. Yu-Gi-Oh! Would be losing, he would give a speech about friendship or the heart of the cards, and then he would draw the Yu-Gi-Oh! Must Win card. And most of the time, he wouldn't even play by the rules. And then rinse and repeat that formula for 200 more episodes and 4 spin-offs, and you got yourself a successful anime. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Was the first sign that gaming channels were gonna be a thing. Kids just love watching other people play games. Because they suck at them. Okay, enough about Japanese cartoons. If Yu-Gi-Oh! Was able to keep my hyperactive attention span engaged, then what TV shows did I think were weird even as a kid? Keep in mind that these opinions are coming from someone who thought the Star Wars prequels were good. So, Misa take it with a grain of salt. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. To be fair, I've never seen a single episode of TMNT. From what I hear, it's a good series, but just the concept by itself was enough for my kid brain to think, this show is silly and I'm not gonna watch it. Like, come on. Ninja Turtles? That's a little weird, seeing that turtles are slow and aren't very maneuverable.
Help, I'm a turtle and I can't get up!
They're mutants? Okay, I guess that makes sense. And they're teenagers? Teenagers are mean to me. This is where I draw the line. Those are 3 adjectives that don't belong in a sentence together. And they're named after famous Renaissance artists? Why don't you just give them normal turtle names, like Sheldon. Whatever. Let's go watch a real show about Japanese people playing card games. I used to think that the Powerpuff Girls was a girly TV show, and so I never watched it. But then the show got rebooted, and everyone on the internet was saying how much they used to love the original, and all I could think was, man, if only I wasn't a sexist baby. Do you guys remember Zaboomafoo? Zaboomafoo was the show on PBS Kids where a lemur and these 2 brothers named the Krat Brothers would teach kids all about wild animals. I always thought that the 2 brothers were named the Krap Brothers, and I only just learned their real names right now when I looked up how to spell Zaboomafoo. Also, they have a website and it looks like this. Anyway, one of the episodes was all about eggs. The Krat Brothers talked all about the different kinds of eggs animals lay, and then the lemur asks,
what's it like to be in an egg?
And then one of the Krat Brothers just appears in a giant egg and says, it's pretty squishy and gooey in here. And he brought a pizza with him.
Pizza!
I watched that episode as a kid and had 2 questions. 1, how'd he get inside the egg? And 2, what laid him? The more I thought about it, the weirder I felt. This is how fetishes start, PBS. Can you believe my brother is inside this egg? Now, when I think back to movies I thought were weird as a kid, the first thing that comes to mind were those frickin' American Mouse Tail ones. They're about these mice trying to immigrate to America. Good luck doing a 2017 reboot. Also, I have to talk about all those bad Disney sequels. They're all bad. Don't tell me, oh, I thought The Little Mermaid 2 was alright. No, they're all bad. My least favorite one was The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. I remember one time I watched both movies back to back, and just having seen the first movie, and then seeing the opening scene in the second one, I thought, what is this? This should be called The Hunchback of Notre Dame! I know those Disney sequels were just an easy way for Hollywood to make money, but think about how much more money they could have made if they just made good sequels. There was this one movie called Quest for Camelot. And as a kid, I liked this movie. It wasn't on my top 10, but it was alright. There was this one griffin who I thought looked cool and had a funny voice.
Precisely.
However, there's one part in the movie, and if you've already seen this movie, you probably know what I'm going to talk about, where a 2-headed dragon sings a song about wanting to be separated from the other dragon. There's a lot of things wrong with this song. I don't want to go too in-depth, but at one part they dress up as Cher and Elvis for some reason, except kids who watch this are too young to know or care about these people, and any adults watching this with their kids are just thinking, This is uncomfortable. Keep in mind that it takes a team of people to animate something like this. This song had to go through multiple, well-paid, professional songwriter people, and they all had to look at the scripts and go, yeah, this is definitely a good idea. The last movie that I suppressed was Charlotte's Web 2. Wilbur's Great Adventure. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie. I thought the first one was a classic story about a pig who cheats death because a nerd spider took pity on him. Also, I just want to talk about this one scene in the first movie where Wilbur found out the farmers were going to kill him, so he started crying, I don't want to die.
I don't want to die! I don't want to die!
I know this pig isn't even real, but that scene was the closest thing to turning me vegan. The sequel is exactly what you'd expect from a sequel made 30 years after the original to be. They did change the character design a lot. I guess all these celebrities are still doing plastic surgery. Look what they made Charlotte look like in the sequel. The reason I bring up this movie is because of a scene towards the end. So this one character just can't fit in with all the other farm animals. He's a black sheep. Literally, they made him a black sheep. He was doomed to be an outcast from the start. And then a fox has a musical number, attacks the farm, and then goes after the black sheep.
The other white meat.
But he doesn't kill and eat the black sheep right there, no. Instead, he kidnaps, or sheepnaps, the sheep and takes him to an abandoned house, as any fox would do. And then, I don't know if I'm interpreting this the wrong way, but watching this scene, I was picking up some creepy, non-advertiser-friendly vibes. The fox is basically telling the sheep, oh yeah, I'm gonna eat ya. I'm gonna eat ya. Oh yeah. I'm gonna put you in my mouth. Just eat him already! Stop licking your lips! Look what he does with his tail, and tell me you're not picking up some sexual tension! There's even a part where the sheep started to run away, but then the fox dragged him back down. Where you think you're going, sheep boy? I'm going to be a furry. If you're weirded out by this, don't worry. I was too. And also, we're all done. Those were all the movies and shows that weren't too far suppressed down for me to tell you about. I asked a friend what movies weirded them out as a kid, and they said The Hunchback of Notre Dame. What are you talking about? That was a great movie. Get on my level, scrub. I used to watch foxes seduce their meals before they vored them.
Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10.03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, that's why you need to get a college education, James? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, no. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives. And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler. They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her. And, as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning, either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, hey, hey, look at me. And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&M's are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, "Achoo!" and flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling. If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer so when you turn on the sink it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes, us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, "Hey, James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, "James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, "James, you're an unpleasant person." Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of swear. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap, she wasn't that kind of person, but she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, "If you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap." And I said, "I don't care, soap tastes good." "All right, you big dingus, shove this in your mouth, you won't do it, no balls." So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen. This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down. What? Why? Because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear. Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video. I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video. Love you, Mom. You made me like this.
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school. Oh, man. What is
poetry?
I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask a class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died! Haha, yeah, they do that. But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time." Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they- Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So, why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch so I can just do this during lunch. Look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your 9th grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day, he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turn into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word "the," but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, "Aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character." And Mr. Poe said, "Oh no, that's just a typo." Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why? Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant. How do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education. It's funny because he dropped out of college. So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home. Which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... hide the body. Science fair. I was talking to a friend saying, oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair and, you know, talk about how much it sucks. And she said, oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair.
What?
That got me wondering, did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones. And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair.
No!
Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From fifth grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the Mythbusters from your average fourth grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you were anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question: what time of the day is the hottest? Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in fourth grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No, 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 no. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as I think this will happen. No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is if blank, then blank because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? They did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy, and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. All right, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns for a grade. If you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever. Except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all of that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria, and you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board, and you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it, but me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha, and that made me wonder, wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets, and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. And I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Thanks, Neil. Yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine.
So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question. Just launch model rockets.
Hey, just a heads up. Don't get too attached to any of the hamsters mentioned in this video. Because they're all dead. And I would say that no hamsters were harmed in the making of this video. Well, I mean, no hamsters were harmed while I made this video. They're all still dead. But some hamsters, they got harmed. Just keep watching.
If there's anything I've learned that the internet just loves is stupid drama and cute animals. So I'm going to talk about all the cute hamsters that I've enslaved. Our family enslaved quite a lot. It was my twin sister who really wanted a pet hamster and bugged my mom to get one. And my mom, being super nice, bought her the cage and we bought everything else, including a little black hamster. We named him Squeaks. And he liked to do this really cute thing where he put all of his food in his hamster wheel and it was made of plastic so he could do that. And then late at night he would just run in it and it would sound like... It was like a more annoying maraca. I actually made a comic on paper inspired by this hamster. Wow, you got a hamster? Yeah, but he doesn't do much. Well, yeah, this type of hamster is nocturnal.
Really? That means I'll hardly notice him.
And then at night, he's trying to sleep, but the hamster is loud, and that's keeping him awake. And the joke is that he said he'd hardly notice him, and he's noticing him. It's not that funny.
And I need to tell you about a dog that we have named Georgie. And actually, a little fun fact about Georgie. She was born on Election Day of 2004, which is a much cooler holiday to have a birthday on. It only comes once every 4 years. It's like leap year. It's more rare. So since George W. Bush won the 2004 election, we named our dog Georgie after him. Aww. And that also means that our 12th birthday was on the 2nd. I definitely won't be able to get this video out by that time, but still.
Happy birthday to you. Yay! So Georgie can get the birthday, because it's her birthday, and Poppy can get the girl, because she's a girl. Do you like it?
I wonder if this tastes good.
Oh.
Georgie, you eat it!
This is a huge waste of money.
Anyway, back to rodents. This dog just loved to murder these animals. Well, I don't know if murder's the right word. No, murder's the right word. You have to understand that Georgie is a West Highland Terrier, and that breed is known for hunting small animals. So having Georgie and a hamster in the same house doesn't mix well. We had this little plastic hamster ball that we put Squeaks in sometimes. The first time we put Squeaks into his plastic ball, my older brother bowled him. Like a bowling ball. PETA, don't sue me. I was vegan for a week. And Georgie thought it was a treat just for her. A treat with a hard outer shell and a juicy middle. She would go straight up rabid wolf on that hamster ball. We didn't put Squeaks inside his hamster ball anymore after that. But there's even more to say about this hamster. One day, me and my sister came home from school and Squeaks was just gone. He escaped! Everyone, check your pockets! We looked everywhere and we couldn't find him. We had to keep a close eye on Georgie at all times. My sister put up missing posters around the house. I don't know if those helped. We made these traps out of Duplo. Did anyone else's parents get them Duplo instead of Legos? No, only my parents were that lame. Alright. We built this box thing out of Duplo, and we made these stairs going up to the top of the box, and we put lettuce on each step, and the plan was that the hamster would walk up the stairs and fall in the box, cause they're stupid. But the traps never worked. And all the hamsters we got in the future that also escaped, we made the same traps, and not once did they ever work.
4 days. Squeaks was missing for 4 days. We found his body inside the wall.
He was alive! My dad was sitting on the couch relaxing. It was dead quiet, and he just heard the faintest... Squeaks was inside the wall! We think he got in through our laundry chute. I don't know what I would do if my kid's hamster was inside the wall of my house.
Well, kids, now's an important time I teach you about death.
My dad ended up cutting 3 holes in the wall and lured Squeaks out with some lettuce. Poor thing, he was probably starving. Hopefully he kept some extra food in his cheeks. So even being tormented by the dog and getting stuck in the wall for 4 days, Squeaks still lived a fulfilling 2 years of life. Hamsters don't have that long a lifespan. We buried him in the backyard. After the Squeaks dynasty, we got some more hamsters. Squeaks 2, that was the next one. We thought maybe if we introduced Squeaks 2 to Georgie, then they could be friends and get along. I'll spare you the details of what happened that night. The next one we named Killer because he kept biting us, so get it? Killer? Yeah, he ended up getting killed.
Nah, I'm just kidding. He wasn't killed. He lived a long and normal hamster life. Squeaks, too, was killed, though. I don't know if you picked up on that. We bought these three little hamsters. Seriously, they're the most adorable little things. They look like this. I forgot their names. We'll just call them the Three Amigos. Aw. The lady at the pet store told us that if we bought hamsters from the same litter, they would all get along. She was obviously just trying to sell us more hamsters. Or maybe she didn't have any siblings. But these bros just hated each other. They would never stop fighting. As I was writing the script for this, I thought, well, maybe they were just aggressively playing. So I googled, do hamsters play with each other, just to be sure, and the first thing that showed up, dwarf hamsters, which is what the Three Amigos were, are quite territorial and will not see former cage mates as old friends. They see them as threatening rivals. So there we go, you really know your hamsters, lady. So we had to get three different cages for them. We put them right next to each other, and I swear they still gave each other some death glares. I actually made a video a long time ago about this time I broke one of their cages. I was cleaning it outside, and for whatever reason, I was like, huh, I wonder if I could stand on it. The answer, no, I couldn't. The glass broke and I bled everywhere, and I still have the scar on my foot. And then all the Three Amigos died off, one by one. Sorry, I'm getting really emotional. We also had this other hamster named Buddy, and I wasn't going to mention him because he just escaped and we never found him. Except as my mom was reading over the script, because she reads over my scripts, thanks mom, she turned to me and said, did we ever tell you what happened to Buddy? And I said, what do you mean? She said, you know how we couldn't find him? Well, we did, but the dog got to him first. This one time I wanted to buy a hamster and I saw some that were on sale and there was this piece of paper next to the cage that said, please adopt us. Oh shoot, I'll take one of these puppies. No, not an actual puppy. I meant one of the hamsters. And I named her Pumpkin Seed because she was that tan pumpkin seed color. But then 1 month after I got her, she just died. For no reason. Even though I loved her. She had food, she had water. This wasn't the first time I was taking care of a hamster, okay? All the other ones lived for a couple of years. I was so sad. I totally got chipped. No wonder they were on sale. They were all halfway to death's door. I mean, I only had the hamster for a month. I didn't get that emotionally attached to it. But then later, I got a different hamster that I paid full price for, and I named her Gumball. Unlike all the other hamsters that were technically my sister's, this hamster was all mine. And she didn't have anything traumatic happen to her. She had a good hamster life. I was pretty sad when Gumball died. We lavished these hamsters, okay? We loved them. At least my sister did. She cried when they died and made little gravestones for them. Our mom used to always say, there's no point in being a skinny hamster. She gave them a lot of treats. So much so that it got to the point that the hamster would come out looking for my mom just by the sound of her voice. All in all, there's about 7 dead hamsters buried in our backyard. Rip in peace, little bros.
Sooboy will always hold a special place in my empty heart. Not because I have fond memories working there, but because some of you really liked it when I talked about working there. And I made buckets with those videos compared to what I was making at Sooboy, which was nice. Apparently I was hashtag relatable enough to connect with millions of people, and it took my channel to where it is today. And then less than 2 weeks later, I made a part 2 to that video, and I struck an even bigger chord with people.
Who likes the sequel better than the original?
People think that I use the word Sooboy in my videos so I wouldn't get sued. This is not true. I wasn't successful enough to get sued. They had other problems to deal with at the time. I called it Sooboy for a joke. In my first video, I said, I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Sooboy. I was making you think that I worked at an unknown place, and then I subverted your expectations by saying I worked at Sooboy. But now at this point in my career, I am calling my previous place of employment Sooboy because I don't want to get subbed. The most requests I get for a video is Sooboy Part 4, but I never really considered making another one because I don't work there anymore. I have no new stories to talk about the place. But something happened recently, and I do want to talk about it. You see, the Sooboy I used to work at closed down, and I am so deeply upset at this news that the only way for me to cope is to make one last video about it. So this story happened a couple of years after I quit working at Sooboy. I was behind on a video, so that meant I was in a mentally damaging mindset called crunch mode, and I had been working all day, and I started getting hungry, and I still hadn't taken Floof on a walk, so I decided to kill 2 birds with 1 stone and eat Floof. Just kidding, I decided to take Floof on a walk to my local Sooboy. And before I entered the store, I picked up Floof and held her in my arms, because I'm not a psychopath. I know taking your dog into a restaurant is tacky and a health code violation, but this is a Sooboy we're talking about. I know how laid back it is here. There are no rules or health codes. One time when I was working at my Sooboy, this 10-year-old kid came in wearing a swimsuit and literally nothing else. And he was unsupervised. He didn't want a sandwich, all he wanted was a cookie, but this kid wasn't wearing shoes or a shirt. The two things you need to get service at a restaurant. So did I tell this shirtless delinquent to get lost? No, he had money, so I did business with him. I don't discriminate against shirtless people. Look, his mom was probably at the grocery store next door, and he just got done with swimming lessons, and he said something like, "Mother, I would be most grateful if you let me consume a pastry with high levels of sugar and simple carbohydrates." And his mom probably said, "Yeah, whatever, nerd. Go get something at Subway." So the point of this story is to let you know that I was the kind of employee who, as long as you were willing to pay for your food, didn't care what you were wearing or what health code you were violating. This is a gosh darn Subway. So I walk in with Floof, and it's completely empty, by the way. It seems like I'm the only one in this town that even likes Subway. And the worker, aka the only other person in the store, said, "Is that a service animal?" Floof's not a service animal, unless the service you want is someone to chew up all your stuff and bark at everyone. But she still emotionally supports me when I tell her I'm gonna die alone. She tries to make me feel better by licking the inside of my nose. But I didn't want to lie to this guy about Floof's emotional support status, because if I said yes and he said prove it, I would be in trouble. So like the emotionally stable enough to not need a dog person that I am, I said, no. And he said, "She can't be in here. If the health inspector came in, they would fire me on the spot." Which, like, geez, dude, you're gonna let the health inspector treat you like that? Stand up for yourself once in a while. So I said, "Okay, I'll leave." Yeah, there are other restaurants in walking distance, Subway guy. The ramen place lets me order with Floof in my arms all the time. I know this because I've already been there twice this week, and the only reason I'm even getting Subway is because I don't want the ramen employees thinking that I'm a weird guy who brings my non-emotional support dog everywhere. You missed out, Subway. Do you know who I am? I used to work here. And then the guy called my bluff. He said, "Wait, we can make it fast." As fast as Jimmy John's? This kid's standing up for himself. I'm proud of him. I knew exactly what to tell him. I want a foot-long ham sandwich on Italian bread with American cheese. I know that's the hardest cheese to pull apart with gloves on, but whatever. He sped run putting on the meat and cheese, and then he asked me, "What kind of vegetables?" And in my mind, I went, "Hold on, you didn't ask me if I wanted it toasted. I see what you're doing. You're trying to get the sandwich finished as quickly as possible, so you're not even going to ask me if I want it toasted and hope I forgot." Well, it's okay, because I didn't want it toasted, but I'm onto you. And then Floof jumped over the counter, peed on the olives, and bit the guy in the jugular. And then licked the inside of his nose. Some people take their job way too seriously. Well, at least some Subway workers are more laid back like me. Like this one time not too long ago, I went back to the Subway I used to work at, and I didn't recognize any of the people there. But someone did get recognized in that store. Me. One of the workers said, "Are you the guy that made the cartoon about working here?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I decided to make his job interesting by telling him, "Hey, kid, this is the place." "What?" "This is where it all happened, kid. These floors are the very same floors that I used to mop. You missed a spot over there." And this kid lost all six of his olives. Okay, I don't use my fame to get into places I'm not supposed to, usually. But this kid was so excited, and I used to work here, so I asked him, "Can I go in the back?" Which is probably breaking a bajillion health code violations, but this kid didn't care. He let me in. It had been 3 years since I had been back there, and literally nothing had changed. I don't know if any of you have ever moved out of your parents' house, and then 3 years later you went back to visit and saw your childhood bedroom, but it was that sort of feeling. The chip boxes were still in the same place, inside the freezer all the food was pretty much where I left it, and the bulletin board had all the same papers. One of the papers was a list of all the employees with their names and phone numbers, and that list was so old that it still had all of my old co-workers' names and numbers, and it even had my own name and number still on the sheet. It had been crossed out, but I still went, "Ah!" and I punched it out with the pencil. Maybe that's how my phone number got leaked. And then I thought, I wonder if the other number is still here. In the very back of the room, there was this desk, and I got down on the gross, unmopped floor, and I scooted underneath the desk, and oh my gosh, it's still here. When I used to work there, one of my coworkers found this store's Wi-Fi password and wrote it down on the bottom side of the desk, so then everyone could watch Netflix instead of work. And the employee had no idea it was there, and he typed it into his phone, and it still worked. "All right, don't tell people that I told you this," I said. "We can't let anyone know this secret." But then the place closed down, so now no one can get in trouble. Anyways, I'm gonna miss that place. It was gross, and I didn't love working there, but in the end, it was the most memorable job I had as a teenager. as it was the only other job that I had. It formed a good work ethic, I made new friends, and I even got to eat free food sometimes. But now I might get sued for this video, so we'll see what happens. So now, every time I walk into Suabue with my non-service animal, a little part of me will be sad that my old Suabue is in ruins. Okay, maybe it's not in ruins, but they'll probably turn it into a nail salon or something. Nothing lasts forever, so it's time to give Suabue a proper burial.
Hey, kids, do you want some candy?
Yeah!
No, kids! Never accept candy from strangers! Don't you know candy can cause cavities? Next time a stranger offers you candy, just think about all the cavities you'd get.
This message brought to you by the Dentists of America Association.
You've all heard the phrase, stranger danger, right? Probably a parent slash guardian taught you that you should never trust strangers. And that's really solid advice because you're just a dumb kid who doesn't know what a pedophile is. But all those parents/guardians grew up without the internet. And, the internet is full of strangers. And I'm one of them! How much do you really know about me?
I'm a math education major. I want to be a math teacher.
Is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little.
Think it was the Halloween after the bunny?
And that's why I'm a furry.
I, James, was a bedwetter until I was 8 years old!
Okay, granted, you do know quite a few personal details. The internet changes how we talk to people, meaning it's a lot easier to talk to strangers on the internet than in real life, because on the internet, you can find strangers who have the same interests, hobbies, and fetishes as you do. But I find it so hard to talk to new people. I would never have enough confidence to be a door-to-door salesman. There are some jobs where you have to deal with annoying customers, but being a door-to-door salesman, you're the annoying one. I guess I just hate bothering people. I'd be a terrible salesman.
What?
Do you have a water filter?
Yeah.
But I was just thinking that I could use another one.
Oh, then you probably don't need this. I'm sorry for wasting your time.
One time I actually did have to be a door-to-door salesman for a Boy Scout activity. But I wasn't even selling anything. I was just telling people about a canned food drive the Scouts were doing. As a troop, it was our job to go door-to-door and ask people if there was any non-perishable food that they were willing to donate. Being a nervous little kid probably benefited me, because most people were super nice, and a lot of people donated stuff. And even the people who didn't donate were like, oh, sorry, I don't have anything on me.
You don't have any canned foods?
Well, dude, that's perfect. The house next door just gave me some. Here, these are for you. But there were two houses I went to that I still remember to this day. One guy pointed to his no soliciting sign and asked me if I knew what it said. Yeah, I know what soliciting is. I'd always thought that soliciting meant I couldn't sell you something, not that I couldn't ask you for free food.
And at the other house, all the guy said was, "Listen, I'm not interested." And then both houses slammed the door in my face. Some of you are probably thinking, that's it? That was nothing. And yeah, looking back at the situation, I got off pretty easily. People who are a full-time door-to-door salesman probably have to deal with way worse stuff every day. But to a fragile-minded kid who was just doing what his scoutmaster told him to do, those experiences scarred me. Luckily, I'm not a salesman, so I'm usually the person on the other side of the door. I never know what to say to these people. For the longest time, I used to tell them the exact same thing. My mom's not home. But one day, that's not going to work. So for now, I just have to pretend that I'm interested, tell them I'll give them a call, and then put their pamphlet into the pile. My grandma, however, would, treat these door-to-door salesmen very differently. You see, my grandma is known as the nicest person on the planet, so she would invite these salesmen inside, offer them a glass of water, and then show them pictures of her grandkids. I'm not exaggerating. One time I was at my gram-gram's house just playing some video games, and this person, an adult person I'd never seen before, just started watching me play. "Are you one of my cousins?" And then my grandma handed him a big cup of water filled with ice and a straw. They talked for a bit. He left, and I asked, "Gram-Gram, who was that?" "Oh, it was someone just trying to sell me a vacuum cleaner." But salesmen don't have it the hardest on the doorstep. There's also Jehovah Witnesses and Mormon missionaries who are literally trying to save your soul. I can't even get mad at these people because if you had the secret to eternal happiness, wouldn't you be telling everyone in your neighborhood too? They're trying to do good and all, but whenever they show up, "Hello, do you have time for... to be baptized?" "Oh, sorry guys, but you're wasting your time. You see, I'm in... YouTuber, so I'm not going to heaven." Here's a story that's a prime example of me failing at talking to people. I had just finished grocery shopping at Walmart, and this isn't important to the story, but Adam from Something Else YT was there.
"Hello. Walmart's where I make friends."
I was walking to my car, and I started eating an Uncrustable frozen PB&J sandwich that I bought, and this guy drives up to me and yells, "Man, you're not even waiting to get in the car. You're just eating that thing up."
"Yeah, I was hungry."
Then he pulls his car over and says, "All right, listen, fellas, I'm traveling to Buckeye and I need $8 for gas, but I forgot my wallet at home." And I thought, huh, that's coincidentally how much a pack of cigarettes costs. He offered us his CDs in exchange for $8, but Adam said the smart thing.
Sorry, man, I don't got any cash on me.
And he showed the man his empty wallet. Poor. "All I have is a 10.
"You stupid mother...
I don't know why I said that. I think I was actually going to pay this man $8 if I had exact change. But here's the thing. I didn't only have a 10. I also had a 20. The guy saw my cash and said, "Man, all you have is a 10. Nah, man, I see you have a 20. And then he raised the price of his CDs from $8 to $30. Like I said, I should have handled the situation differently. If I was going to give him money, I should have given him a 10 and said, "Now give me $2 back." But he had a solid argument. He said, "If there were 20 dudes who all tried to jump you, I'd have your back." Now that's not a bad price for a Walmart parking lot bodyguard. You know, man, you gotta realize that money is just an object. "Okay, then why do you want it?" He asked us, "Do you boys like rap music?" He does.
"Hey, I do. I listen to like Eminem, Kendrick Lamar, and Chance the Rap." "Oh no."
And then the man pulled out his CDs, but he didn't have a CD player in his car, so he asked me if I could use my CD player, and I said, "Sure," but my CD player already had my mixtape in that I never bothered to take out, so when I turned on my CD player... Oh, I got something in my throat. By the way, if you want to listen to my whole mixtape, link in the description. Adam and I started listening to his CDs, and the man started doing this. "Yeah, that's the good stuff. So what'll it be, little man? You gonna give me the money or nah, huh? Huh? Do I need to get my gang of 19 other dudes out? Huh?" Yeah, I ended up giving the guy my $30. Honestly, I didn't get the meth head drug user vibe from him. He was more of a goofy dad who just needed $30. And after I gave him the money, he thanked us, saying things like, "God bless you," and talked about how much he was going to miss his CD. Now, was I scammed out of $30 and secretly this guy is laughing to himself that he sold a used rap CD to a white boy? Yeah, that definitely could be a possibility, but I hope whoever this guy is, that he pays the good deed forward. And I hope you made it to wherever you need to be. In conclusion, never carry cash on your kids.
you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you...
Mommy, why is brother screaming?
Shut the fuck up, Sally. You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad.
I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi, what you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games.
I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill, like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than chutes. In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played. There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron. Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4, I don't want to play that game. Because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree. And you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer, even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone. Because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing! Sign me up. While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes, then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the- Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw, you know, so that way you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at... D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, Someone write that down so we don't forget. And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain, and he goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them, hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it.
Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards, but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these five pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you asked someone, hey, do you want to play a game? They would say, okay, I summon my Charizard. In attack mode. Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game. But my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So, if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all three card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned. Now, don't get me wrong, the Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slightly better Pot of Greed, which is a card that allows me to draw 2 new cards from my deck and place them into my hand, is one of the top 9 most powerful Magic cards? Yeah, Pot of Greed is banned too. Games play such an important role in childhood, and here's what they all teach us. In Magic, if you're really good at what you do, no one will invite you to their tournament. Monopoly, white-collar crime is okay. Battleship, just guess and check. Snakes and ladders, if you see a ladder, climb it immediately. And no one cares about Neopets. Now, if you excuse me, I have to show this prison guard my coupon I have that lets me get out of jail anytime I like.
James, you said you were going to make a teacher's part two. I didn't subscribe to fake news.
I know. Don't worry, I'll do that next video. But right now we're doing this. So my friend Your Movie Sucks, great channel, over 500,000 subs, asked me and a bunch of other YouTubers if we could talk about a movie that scared us as a kid. Now, growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch scary movies. I remember one time my parents were watching a movie downstairs, and I went down to see what all the noises were about, and my mom said, "Oh no, honey, you can't watch this, it's too scary." And then years later, I learned that the movie they were watching was Jurassic Park. I think I could have handled it, Mom. I don't know if you could tell by the length of this video, but it's going to be pretty different than the videos that I usually post. But I think it's good to try out new things, and hopefully we'll all have a fun time listening to me talk about this movie. Because, folks, I'm excited to share with you the movie that traumatized me most as a kid. And that movie is, drumroll please, is, you already read the title, The Dark Crystal. Okay, so The Dark Crystal came out in 1982, 14 years before I was even born. This movie was made for a whole different generation of people, but somehow I still saw it. I don't remember how I saw it, my family didn't own it on VHS, and I forget how old I was exactly, but let's say for the sake of this video, I saw this movie when I was 17.
because that's legally still a child. This movie was directed by Frank Oz and freaking Jim Henson. Jim Henson is the creator of, I don't know if you've heard of this, but The Muppets? You might have seen them before. There's no denying that Jim Henson was a very talented man when it came to puppets, and the work he did on The Dark Crystal is amazing. As much as I'm about to talk this movie down, it's honestly a work of art. The most enjoyment I got rewatching it was just the artistic appreciation of the character design, the scenery, the costumes, and most importantly, the puppetry. Some of the puppetry was amazing, like this shot. How'd they do that without CGI? And did I mention that there's no people in this film? Except for full body shots, then they just used a real person dressed up and had them not face the camera. But as I rewatched The Dark Crystal, I realized that the movie was kinda garbage. So instead of talking about the parts of the movie that scared me as a child, I'm gonna be talking about why this movie was pretty bad. So now this video just turned into one of those bad movie review videos, but honestly, I like watching other people talk about bad movies, like The Room and Birdemic and, oh, what was that other one? I can't quite put my paw on it. For this video, I ended up doing some research, something I don't normally do for videos, and oh man, is this rabbit hole deep. Jim Henson had a bunch of ideas for the world of the Dark Crystal, but wasn't able to fit all of his ideas into 90 minutes of film. And because he didn't explain the rules of the world well enough, the movie suffered. It felt unfinished and unstarted. Basically, the movie didn't leave you wanting more, it just left you thinking, wait, what? Some of you might be thinking, well, James, it's just a kid's movie. Kids are dumb. Why are you analyzing a kid? Shut up. Brian Froud, one of the head artists of the movie, even said that when we finished the film, we knew that we had only seen a fragment of this other world. Bad fragment, I guess. So even the creators of this movie felt that they left out a lot of stuff. So in 2012, a three-part comic book was published to be as a prequel to the movie, and I bought and read all three of them. And I will say that they did do a better job explaining the world that Jim Henson had in mind, but you shouldn't have to read a book before you see a movie.
Especially since the books weren't available until after the movie came out.
In the movie, stuff happens for no reason. Like in one scene, the main character, this is Jen, the main character, by the way, get used to looking at this guy's face. I've done so much digging and research into this world that I'm completely desensitized by how weird this puppet looks. If you think this puppet looks creepy, you should have seen some of his earlier designs. Just be thankful this is what you ended up with. So in this scene, Jen is trying to pick out which of the crystal shards is the right one that he needs for his quest. And what does he do to find the right one? That's right, he plays his flute, and then the right shard he needed just glows. Wouldn't you do that too if you were in the same situation? This movie doesn't explain why the crystal likes his music, it doesn't come up later, it just happens. That's basically this whole movie. Things happening slowly. So here we go, children. Hold my hand as I take you on a magical journey, but not too magical that it doesn't make sense. That is the Dark Crystal. The plot. It starts with a narrator telling us that there's this world and that it's dying. By the way, this world is named Thra. They don't mention it once in the movie, but in the prequels and in the Wikipedia article, they all called it Thra. Okay. Thra is dying because this one crystal, this one, cracked. How? I don't know. I mean, I do know because I read the prequels, but this movie doesn't tell us. Are you still with me? Good, we're not even a minute in. Because this crystal cracked, two new species were born. The cruel Skeksis, the bad guys, and the gentle Mystics, the good guys. And both species are dying. Now, I'm no biologist, but I think they're probably dying because there's no woman. That would wipe out a species pretty quickly, I'd think. Instead of having women, the Skeksis use the crystal to make them young again. Maybe. It's either the crystal or the sun.
So too they learn to draw new life from the sun.
Okay, so then what do you need the crystal for? Now we see the good creatures, the Mystics, and with the Mystics lives another creature called a Gelfling. It's like an elfling, but with a G. You may remember him from earlier. He's naked now, but meet your protagonist, Jen. This movie makes up so many words, just try and keep up.
And a journey must begin. The journey of Jen.
Okay, that's a little pretentious movie. All right, let's tone it down a little. Then we see that the Emperor Skeksis is dying, oh no, and then we get the second scariest scene in the whole movie. Yeah, we're not even 15 minutes in and we're at the part that gave me nightmares. Then the Mystic that's basically Jen's dad is also dying, and he tells Jen that he needs to find the cracked piece of the crystal, the shard, and then he just needs to plop that sucker back in the crystal where it belongs. And then boom boom, the world is saved. Again, they don't explain why doing this would save the world. Like, they could have at least tried to make something up, like once the crystal is fixed, woman will appear. Jen's dad tells him to
follow the greater sun for a day to the home of Ogre.
Now, I'm no astronomer, But I think following the sun for a day would just make you go in a circle.
What am I supposed to do when it's noon?
Now the Skeksis, they're like, oh, well, dang it, guys. Who's going to be our new emperor? This Skeksis named Chamberlain.
It's time to make my move.
Who is my second favorite character in this whole movie, thinks that he should be emperor. I mean, who wouldn't want to be emperor of, like, eight other bird monsters? The way that you can remember that this Skeksis is Chamberlain is that every time he's on camera, he says this. Hey man, you can't be emperor, says the Skeksis. Oh yeah? Fight me for it, replied Chamberlain. Since these two are puppets and don't have lower bodies, they can't actually fight each other, which is super disappointing. So instead, the two have a competition to see who can hit a rock the hardest, because that's how you tell who's fit to lead. You can't have someone be your emperor when they can't even hit a rock that hard. Anyway, Chamberlain loses, and all the other Skeksis banish him and rip up his clothes. Okay, now hold on. Do you see what's funny about this screenshot? This Skeksis is wearing glasses, meaning in this universe optometrists exist, and this Skeksis had to go through an eye exam to get his prescription. Do you like number one or number two? Does anyone else think that's funny? No? Alright. Anyway, after the Skeksis banish Chamberlain, they see in the crystal that there's this Gelfling just walking around. Man, I didn't know the crystal could snitch like that. So they send out these crab monsters to get him. And by the way, those crab monsters are called Garthams, and they are created by this handsome Skeksis. You'd know that if you read the Wikipedia article. Anyway, back to Jen. What's he up to?
I'm not ready to go alone. Alright. Alone, then.
Took you long enough. Jen is supposed to follow the sun to Agura's house? Agura's? He runs into her and she's this old hag who tells him that the three suns are going to line up soon and when that happens, the world might end. Or it will begin. She doesn't know.
I know because I've already seen this movie.
She also, for some reason, has a box of crystals. One of them is the shard that Jen is looking for, but she doesn't know which.
Which one is it?
Don't know.
So Jen narrows down the box of crystals to three shards.
It's one of these three, I'm sure.
What? No, you've never even seen the dark crystal. How do you know it's one of those? Whatever, okay, I can roll with this. Then, if you remember, Jen gets the idea to play his flute at the shard, and then the correct shard just glows for some reason. Why does the crystal react to flute music? That's not a thing. Crystals don't have ears. Now, when you create a fantasy world, you can't explain everything. Sometimes the answer is just, oh, it's magic. In Frozen, they don't explain how Elsa got her ice powers. She was just born with it, okay? It's magic. And the audience is all okay with it, as long as they don't take it too far. But this movie just tries to pull off so much stuff that doesn't make sense. There's a line, and this movie crosses it multiple times. Then the crab people attack Agura's house, Jen escapes with a shard, boom, next day. Okay, I know I've been talking bad about this movie, but the amount of detail in this forest scene is pretty amazing. I mean, it's not doing anything to drive the plot forward, but I just think it's cool to look at. Anyway, back to review mode. Jen falls in the mud, what an idiot, and then he meets up with the... Oh jeez, that's a girl! That's a girl! So there's a girl Gelfling now, her name is Kira.
I'll take a potato chip and eat it.
She's speaking gibberish.
And
then for some unexplained, unimportant reason, when they touch hands, they share memories. I mean, I don't know exactly what happens when you touch hands with another woman. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that's supposed to happen.
What's happening?
We're dream fasting, sharing our memories.
I'm having a bath.
Okay, three things. First, this seems like a plot device-y way to just throw in some backstory, but whatever. Second, Jen, you just found out that you're not the last of your species, and when you realize that you're sharing memories with her, you decide to show this person you just met you having a bath. I mean, I guess she did show you her mom dying, so let's just get all that personal stuff out of the way. And third, somewhere on Earth, there exists a baby naked Jen puppet. And I need to have it. Then we're introduced to my third favorite character, Kira's dog, Fizzgig. He doesn't really add anything to the story, he's just that lovable pet slash side character. Hey, that's a lot like my dog.
Hey, puppy!
Also, Kira can talk to animals. Okay. Then we're treated to this really great scene. A whole 2 minutes of the Skeksis eating. But honestly, though, I kinda love this scene. It does a great job creeping me out. Okay, it does go on for a minute too long, but bear with me here. The Skeksis' clothing and silverware are Victorian, so it gives off a haunted mansion sort of vibe. And just the character design and the way the Skeksis are eating, it just comes off as unnerving. A lot of movies' scary parts are jump scares or gore. At least I think they do that. I'm not allowed to watch scary movies. But this is such a different way to unease an audience. It kind of reminds me of the first half of a Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared video. Nothing necessarily scary is happening, but it's still able to make the audience feel uncomfortable. Basically, the whole point of this scene was that the crab people were like, hey, we got this old hag, but we didn't get the Gelfling. And then the Skeksis were like, wow, okay, release the crystal bats.
Crystal bats, fly! Search the land, search the water, search the sky!
Okay, this might be nitpicking, and I'm no Gelfling expert, but I think you can rule out searching the sky. I don't see too many Gelflings just flying around. So one of the bats finds Jen and Kira. They go back to Kira's village. Jen doesn't even know where he's supposed to take the shard. His dad never told him what to do after he got the shard. He tells Kira about his quest and what Algura told him.
You know the three suns in the sky? They're going to come together soon. It's called the great something or other.
See, even Jen doesn't remember these made-up names. Really would have been convenient if you told her this information when you were sharing memories. So then the crab monsters show up and basically murder and capture Kira's whole family. Yeah, it was pretty traumatizing. And right when the crab monsters are about to attack Jen and Kira, Chamberlain comes out of nowhere. Remember the guy? He steps in between them and stops the attack. And Kira and Jen escape because Chamberlain saved them. Oh, and then Jen throws away the shard. Boom, next day. Kira finds the shard that Jen threw, and then the two find some hieroglyphics about a prophecy. It says a Gelfling is going to save the world and kill all the Skeksis. It doesn't matter. And then, oh, Chamberlain shows up. Hey, Chamberlain. Hey, guys, I'm sorry for killing your entire species. We just didn't want the prophecy to come to fruition. You understand, right? So what if we all go to the castle together, we can eat some food, and just have a gay old time and talk this whole thing over? What do you think? And then he says, please, a lot.
Please, please, please. Please, yes, please.
Now how can you say no to this lovable guy? He just got kicked out of the Skeksis Club, he's all alone, he just saved you from some crab monsters, and he did say please a lot. I'm just saying, if I was Jen, I totally would have trusted Chamberlain 100%. But instead, Jen just stares at him blankly, and then Kira ruins everything and tells Jen not to trust him, and then they run away.
Wait! Please make peace!
Eh, might have been the right call. So then, for some reason, Kira knows where the castle is, and since she can talk to animals, she calls up these things called Landstriders. They're just a person walking on four stilts, and they ride the Landstriders all the way to the castle. I have a lot of problems with this next scene. So one of the Skeksis takes a podling that they just captured, locks it into a chair, and tells the podling that they're gonna suck its essence away and make it a slave.
Won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence. Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
You know, the podlings don't speak English. They speak a whole different language. The Skeksis is just talking gibberish to this guy while he's just locked in a chair like, what's going on? Like, none of what you're saying is going through this guy's head. And so only the Emperor can drink the essence, and that will make him stay young forever. So what do you need the sun for? And also, what killed the last Skeksis? Looked like old age to me. Yeah, that's cool and all, but we get the most terrifying scene in the whole movie. That's right, this is the winner. You gave me the most nightmare scene. You win $1 million. Congratulations, scene! I can go on for hours about how this part of the movie gave me nightmares, but honestly, it speaks for itself. I think what made it worse was that the podling was tied down to the chair and he was just so helpless and his whole face melted off and just... ugh! But now that I'm older, all I can think is, what do you guys need slaves for? So far, the only thing slaves have done was pull on a rope to make some swords appear out of the ground and bring you guys a plate of food. Why is there such a high demand for slaves that you need to make new ones? What do you guys even do all day? Then Kira and Jen arrive at the castle. They see the crab people taking in the pod people from Kira's village. They try and save the podlings, but completely fail. The Landstriders die immediately. Jen and Kira open the cage that the podlings are in, and then the two get cornered. And what are they gonna do, you ask? Well, isn't it obvious? They're gonna jump and slowly float down to safety because Kira has wings! That never came up in the memory-sharing bit. So I guess when the Skeksis told the Crystal Bats to search for the Gelflings in the sky, they weren't that far off. Hey, Kira, sorry we left your whole family back there. We totally didn't save them, like, at all. They're probably gonna get turned into slaves now. Okay, we're almost done, everyone. We're getting to Climax Town. Jen and Kira sneak into the castle. Chamberlain's there. He basically murders Jen. And since he captured a Gelfling, he's not an outcast anymore. You guys should have just went with him the first time. Now two Landstriders are dead. Kira goes into the slave room, and as a kid, I was already so traumatized the first time seeing a podling get turned into a slave, and now seeing Kira getting her essence taken away, I lost my mind.
Oh, shoot! Kira's getting turned into a slave!
Luckily, remember the old hag, Agura? She's like, yo, you can talk to animals. Just ask them to help you. Oh, okay.
Camaleon!
She breaks free, and the animals push the Skeksis that was in the room down this pit, and that kills them. Leading up to this point, it's hinted that the Skeksis and the Mystics are, like, connected. When something happens to a Skeksis, there's a mystic counterpart that experiences the same thing. So when this Skeksis died, there was a mystic just walking around that just... And none of the other mystics react.
Yeah, it happens.
Then we see that the mystics can control the crab monsters. I'm guessing it's because they're connected to the Skeksis, who also can control the crab monsters. So having a mystic go with Jen on his journey in the first place would have been super helpful back when Kira's village was getting raided. Alright, let's just wrap this up. Vizgig dies, Jen's not really dead, he finds the dark crystal, he jumps to it and then drops the shard. Kira has to throw the shard back to Jen, but while she's doing that, she gets murdered. I said spoiler warning, right? And then Jen plops that sucker back into the crystal. The castle crumbles around everyone and the world is saved. But first, the Skeksis and the Mystics walk into each other because they're connected, remember? They become one again, and are you ready for this? They walk into each other and they turn into tree aliens. I'm not even joking. According to the prequels, these things are actually aliens. This is what the whole movie has been building up to. The bad guys are just one half of a schizophrenic alien tree person, and if you read the prequels, you'd know that. Is this supposed to be a plot twist? Because to me, it just seems like a plot is doing whatever it wants. So much weird, unexplained stuff has already happened in this movie, so at this point, I don't even care. By the way, Kira and Vizgig don't actually die. This is a kid's movie, after all. And then the world is saved, even though there's only, like, three people who inhabit it now. The end. So that was the movie. Want to know something funny? I've already used more words in this video than there were words in the entire movie. Also, I need to ask, Jen was supposedly the chosen one.
At this time, Jen is the chosen one.
But I would make the argument that Kira should have been the chosen one. Let me go down my list. She saved Jen from the mud. She sniped a crystal bat out of the sky. When the crab monsters attacked, she had to tell Jen to run. She found the shard on the ground after Jen threw it. She tells Jen not to trust Chamberlain. She knew where the castle was and got the Landstriders to take them there. She used her wings to float Jen down to safety. She was able to get out of being turned into a slave by herself. And she threw the shard back to Jen after his butterfingers dropped it. And how does she get rewarded? By getting stabbed. All Jen did was play his flute at a magic rock. This guy's a doofus. Who chose Jen to be the chosen one? Bad choice. Now, I've said who my second and third favorite character in this movie is, but who's my favorite character? There's only like three other characters to choose from, so who could it be? Well, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite character isn't in this movie. My favorite character of the Dark Crystal universe is Rayunip. Agura's son. Okay, I know I just finished the movie, but let me talk about the prequel comics for a minute. Remember Agura, the old lady? Well, turns out she's an immortal being and has been around since the creation of this world. Alright, and one day a meteor hits the planet, and she, like anyone else would do, gives life to it. And out pops Rayunip. And he's basically the main character of the prequel books, and is also technically an alien. I like him because he's the only one who questions what's going on. He asks the same questions I'm asking. So he's my favorite, he's the only character I ever wanted to cosplay. If they ever make the prequels into a movie, I call dibs on playing Rayunip, that's how it works. I call dibs on playing this character. I just show up to auditions and I'm like, I actually called dibs, so... Also, in the second book, Agura and her son are having a moment, and Rayunip says, "Will you remember me, mother? After all the harm I caused? I will never forget you, child." Well, you didn't really seem to remember him in the movie. Also, if there's any producers watching, that was my audition just now to play Rayunip. Would I recommend you watch The Dark Crystal? Well, I did just spoil the whole thing, so no, it would be a waste of time at this point. But if I was talking to someone who hasn't watched this video, then yeah, I would recommend it. Even with all of its flaws, I still think it's a creative film, and I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to talk about it afterwards. Maybe I was desensitized doing all this research, but I also enjoyed the prequel comic books. After all, my favorite character's in there. There's also a manga that was made, Legends of the Dark Crystal, and it's supposed to take place in between these books and the movie, so these books don't even bridge the gap between the start of the... It leaves still on a cliffhanger. These books still leave on a cliffhanger. Speaking of manga, there were plans to make a sequel to The Dark Crystal, another movie, but the film ended up getting canceled. But a 12-part comic series is being produced by Boom Studios, and it's not even completed yet. They're only on, like, the second installment. This is recent, you guys, so now is a great time to get into the Dark Crystal fandom. Like I said, I think The Dark Crystal is a creative story. Jim Henson really bit off more than he can chew making this movie, but seeing how many comics have been made to tell this story, maybe The Dark Crystal is told better through comics and not with the limitations of puppets from the 80s. Anyway, that's just what I thought about the movie.
Mommy, why do humans hate us?
I don't know, Matthew. Our species is completely harmless to them, and we keep the mosquito population down, who are responsible for killing more humans every year than other humans do.
So, humans have no rational reason to fear us, but they still do?
I'm afraid humans aren't that smart, Matthew. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed humans bite.
Love you, Mommy.
I love you too, Matthew.
Mom?
I think the hate that spiders get is a tad bit undeserved. Okay, fine, if you're in the shower and you see a spider crawling up your leg like a freaking pervert, then that's an appropriate time to freak out. But other than that, spiders are most likely not going to hurt you. Their webs are too weak to trap you, they don't know how to open doors, and there's only like a 50% chance that they're venomous. Okay, but for real, unless you live in Australia, the chances of you dying by a spider bite is pretty low. There are venomous spiders, yes, and if you're having a negative reaction to a spider bite, then you should get treatment, but a large percentage of spiders are harmless. Even the Black Widow, known as the most venomous spider in North America, won't kill you if you're a healthy adult. Their bite will be painful for a couple of days, sure, but like, you'll walk it off.
That was a joke. If you get bitten by a Black Widow spider, then don't walk it off. Go see a doctor.
And hey, if you're lucky enough, you'll get superpowers. So, wait, the two most dangerous spiders in North America are the brown recluse and the Black Widow? What are you trying to say about dangerous colors, America? Oh, wait, the great white shark's even more dangerous. Never mind. Technically, sharks are, like, the second least dangerous animal out there besides puppies. Because, like, they don't want to eat humans. I mean, like, if you had to fight a spider and a shark, this shark would win. Also, spiders kill pests. According to this comic I made in 2014 and this National Geographic article, a single spider can eat about 2,000 insects a year. So if you're not a fan of flies, moths, or mosquitoes, which incidentally kill 600,000 people a year, then you're on Team Spider, because they're also not fans of them. Well, they are fans of them, but they are fans because they eat them. I'm not saying you have to be roommates with arachnids. I'm just saying that if you see a spider, don't put it through torture continuously smashing it with a blunt object. It's still moving! It's still moving!
Kill me.
Instead, get a cup and carefully place it over a spider. They're really dumb, so doing this will be super easy. Then scoop up your new best friend with a piece of paper and yeet it back into the wild with the rest of God's glorious creatures. Yeah, actually, there's a high chance that they won't make it being thrown into a completely different environment, but they should have thought of that before they decided to live in my house. Even though a spider has 8 eyes, they have terrible eyesight, so that spider that landed on your face did not do it intentionally. Some spiders that live in caves are completely blind. They don't even have 1 eye. But even if they did have eyes, their whole world would still be pitch black. What a sad life to be a part of. Just every time you're outside seeing the sun, just think that somewhere there's a colony of spiders just in pure blackness. Just never seeing the sun, never seeing their children smile or graduate college. They're just sitting in a cave for all their life. So is nature, and that is the way the cookie crumbles. Also, we're forgetting the most amazing thing about spiders, which is that they're incredibly talented in web design. Proportionately, the silk that makes up a spider web is stronger than the fibers that make up a bulletproof vest. So next time you go to a gunfight, put on a spider web instead.
The amazing thing about spiderwebs is that not only can they save Wilbur from being slaughtered, but it's just stupid incredible that something so small can make such an intricate shape from nothing but the material inside their own bodies. The golden silk orb weaver spider has too many middle names and has enough silk inside of them to make 3 full spiderwebs. And it's this guy's job to pin that spider down and pull out all of its silk like some kind of spider predator. It's okay, though. The documentary said he was just harmlessly immobilizing the spiders. I can't believe this is someone's job. I don't think telling people I'm a YouTuber is that bad anymore. So, what do you do for a living? I harmlessly immobilize spiders with thumbtacks and pull silk out of their abdomen to add to my ever-increasing collection. What about you? Oh, I, make YouTube videos? I see people with arachnophobia being irrationally afraid of these harmless little guys, and I just don't see the sense of fearing something that ultimately does good things for the ecosystem. But you know what we should be afraid of? Bees! Bees are terrifying! Look, they're sucking the blood out of this guy to make honey! Oh, they're dying at an alarming rate? Good! Okay, that was a joke. Bees are, without a doubt, the most important insect on this planet. Not only do they have the best work ethic of any living thing on Earth, which is why none of them are YouTubers, they also pollinate 30% of the world's crops. Don't ask me who pollinates the rest, because I don't know. Without bees, humanity would turn to pure anarchy. Bees are so important that world-famous comedian Jerry Seinfeld made a documentary about the life of a bee and what the world would be like without them. But ever since 2006, bees, just like all the memes say, have been dying at an alarming rate. The scary thing is that scientists don't know exactly the reason for this bee-pocalypse. But they think it has to do with new pesticides being used on farms, parasites that kill the bee, and global warming. So once we figure out how to fix those 3 problems, we'll be in good shape. It's a little bee pun. We like to have fun around here. Now, what can you, a concerned citizen, do to stop the dropping population of bees? Most likely nothing, because I don't think anyone watching this makes laws about pesticides or stopping global warming. So we just gotta sit back and hope the people who make those laws know the importance of bees. But maybe you should plant a couple flowers just to be on the safe side. The reason I have a fear of bees is that I've gotten stung by a bee not 3 times, not 4 times, but 2 times. Now, obviously, as I've grown, I see the importance of bees, and I know not to throw rocks at them. The first time I got stung, I was outside, and I guess I was playing too close to a beehive, because I got stung on my arm, and I cried a lot. The second time, I was in my backyard, barefoot, and I was walking around, and you know how sometimes when you're about to do something, and your brain realizes that you're about to make a mistake, but your body is already committed to the motion, and you don't have enough time to stop yourself? So I was in the middle of taking a step, and I saw that I was about to step on a bee, but my body didn't have the reaction time or the motor skills to avoid the step, and... I'm sure the bee was just acting in self-defense, but... Man, that scarred me. Some people may have an allergic reaction to bee stings, and they should go to a hospital if they get stung, but in my case, it just hurt a lot, and my mom put baking soda over where I got stung, and I cried. When people found out I was afraid of bees, they would always tell me that bees are docile creatures, and they only sting you if they feel threatened. They would say the same thing about spiders too, by the way. So whenever I would see a bee, I would silently freak out and stay as still as a rock, cause unlike spiders, with bees, you're not allowed to fight back. You'll both lose if that happens. I gotta show this bee how unthreatening I am. They should be able to just take a look at me and know that. But then, when a bee lands on your arm... Holy frick. That's true fear. You just have to quietly watch the bee, hoping it didn't just have a bad day and decide to end its life on you. That never happened, though. Ever since I took a more calm approach to bees, I've never been stung. And I've never been bitten by a spider, either. Wasps, though, they're just mean. They can pack up and leave for all I care. I don't give a crap about wasps. So, what did we learn? I almost lost a $1,000 scholarship because of plagiarism. Let's talk about that. Plagiarism. Adverb. The practice of taking someone else's work or ideas and passing them off as one's own. Just the word plagiarism sounds like a crime. Racism, sexism, and plagiarism. I'm not here to talk about people who repost my comics, JPEG'd, cut my name off, and have the audacity to put their own watermark on. Nah, not that kind of plagiarism. I'm gonna tell you about all the times that I plagiarized in school. And, okay, just off topic, I wanna address something publicly. I don't go looking through other people's comics and go, oh, this comic's funny, I'm gonna redraw it and pass it off as my own. No, I'm not about that life. But some of my comics have been very similar to other people's comics. I read a lot of comics, so it's possible I saw them and then repressed them in my memory and drew them again, or it's possible that it's all a coincidence and me and someone else just came up with the same idea. It happens all the time with other cartoonists, not just me. Again, I don't purposely take comic ideas and try and pass them off as my own. Whenever people point out that my comic is a lot like someone else's, I get really sad. So you guys should check out these other cartoonists, they're really good. Anyway, I just wanted to say that at the beginning of the video because I'm going to be telling you about times that I actually did plagiarize. But that was just in school, okay? I keep plagiarism off the internet. Isn't that right, Matthew? I cheated a bit in school. An occasional glance at my partner's desk, maybe jot down that important equation on my hand, nothing too big. I had a math class where we went to lunch in the middle of the class, and whenever we had tests, the teacher wouldn't split the test into two parts. Do you expect us not to exchange notes? The first time that I got caught cheating was in 9th grade. And if you stalk me and watch my old videos, you know that I went to a preparatory school my freshman year. And in preparatory school, the amount of work they gave you as kids was just stupid. So cut me some slack. In one class, we had to write an essay about something historical or something, and I chose to write about the Berlin Wall, specifically about people who escaped across the Berlin Wall. Now, I chose this topic because, I don't know if you know this, but there's a National Geographic documentary about this exact topic. So I didn't copy and paste anything into my essay per se, it's just I told the exact same stories in the exact same order as the documentary, and okay, I might have wrote some things down word for word, but at least I didn't plagiarize it from Wikipedia, okay? So I didn't copy and paste anything until I had to write the conclusion of the essay, and I found this article talking about it, and the article said some things that would have been perfect in my essay, so control C, control V. I turned it in, I didn't think too much of it, but then when I got it back, the conclusion paragraph had been highlighted and a "see me" was written next to it. So I had gotten in trouble for plagiarizing the conclusion. Just the conclusion. Nothing else. To be honest, I'd kind of forgotten that I copied and pasted the conclusion. I thought he knew that I basically turned in a script of a documentary. The teacher, who we'll call Mr. Batman, it makes sense if you knew him, he took me outside of the classroom, he told me that it was bad that I plagiarized, and he called my parents that freaking snitch. My parents got mad at me too. He gave me a chance to rewrite the essay, and I remember just being so traumatized and stressed out that night, I kept thinking, what if he finds a documentary and sees that I practically plagiarized the whole essay? I ended up rewriting not only the conclusion, but the whole freaking essay. I turned in the new essay, and I don't think he ever found out that I copied the whole thing. Except, I did just admit it, and he watches my videos. Seriously, in April, he emailed me and asked if I was the same James that was in his class. He's the only teacher to ever reach out to me, and even after all those years, I still didn't tell him that I plagiarized the whole thing. So, hi, Mr. Batman. You can't change my grade now, can you? But that was a good experience for me to have. It taught me a valuable lesson, because I didn't plagiarize a single essay for the rest of high school. But then community college rolled around. I did community college for a bit because I couldn't afford university on a subway payroll. I took honors and AP classes in high school. I was a relatively good student, except I didn't take any of the AP tests. So when I went to community college, I had to take classes that were a step below the classes I took in high school. What a great way to spend my time! Senior year of English, we were writing essays analyzing poetry. Freshman year of college, we were writing movie reviews. And the teacher didn't even like me. She thought I was a slacker because I was never paying attention. I didn't take community college seriously, but it was so easy, I was still getting amazing grades. On the third semester of community college, I took a public speaking class. Now, I might be an introvert, but I don't have a problem with public speaking. That's part of my job now. I took the class because it would be an easy A, and I needed a communications credit for my major. I wanted to be a math teacher, and you may not have noticed, but they publicly speak all the time. So I take the class, I'm like the best person in the class, right? And for the final, we had to give a persuasive speech in front of everyone. Oh, and by the way, I didn't learn, like, any tricks to help with public speaking. The whole class was literally just us giving speeches to each other over and over. So three semesters of doing easy classes and wasting my time, my apathy meters were just off the charts. I didn't want to work too hard, so I chose to do my speech on why we should get rid of the penny. And I don't know if you know this, but there's this YouTube video made by CGP Grey that makes great arguments on why we Americans should get rid of the penny. Again, I didn't copy and paste anything per se, it's just the speech I gave had the exact same arguments in the exact same order as CGP Grey. Okay, it was pretty much a one-for-one recreation of his whole video. I'm sorry, I thought we were getting graded on public speaking, not writing original speeches. The teacher caught me, I guess she's a fan of CGP Grey, and gave me a zero on the final. So I ended up getting a D in the class, and that was the worst grade I got in community college. Part of me was like, whatever, I don't care. This next semester, though, I wanted to go to a real college. And still trying to be economical, I found that it was actually cheaper for me to go to an out-of-state school than to go in-state. At this school, they gave scholarships to out-of-state students who had high enough GPAs and enough credits. It would have saved me thousands of dollars. And I had family living in this state, so that was another reason why I wanted to go to that school. But here's the thing. Even with that D, I still had a high enough GPA to get the scholarship, but since I failed, it didn't count as a credit, so I ended up being one credit short for what was required. Plagiarizing was going to cost me thousands of dollars. My options were either stay home and do a one credit semester of community college, or beg the university to give me my scholarship anyway. During Christmas, my family visited the state the school was in, so me and my dad got the chance to go to the school and basically talk our way into getting the scholarship. We talked to 5 different people. Now that's public speaking. I had to use my persuasive talking skills that I would have learned. And all of them were telling us there's nothing we can do. But we were talking to one lady, she was telling us the same thing about not being able to do anything. She looked at my transcript. She said, "Oh, you failed public speaking." She looked at it for a bit. She typed something on her computer. She printed out a piece of paper and handed it to me saying, "It's okay, I'm not good at public speaking either."
She thought I was bad at public speaking! She thought I failed because I was insecure or something and not because I did something wrong.
Oh, I'm just terrible at speaking to the public.
So really, there was something you could do.
I got the scholarship because a lady wearing a lot of eyeshadow took pity on me. But I only ended up staying a semester and a half at that school because my YouTube kicked off and now I'm doing that full time. But I'm still thankful I got the scholarship. I hope my public speaking teacher could see where I am now. I speak in front of millions of people for my job. I mean, I can't see them and I'm just reading everything off a script in my closet. And I didn't get punished for plagiarism. I didn't learn my lesson. And I didn't learn anything in your class.
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kinda wanna meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who were husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned 2 stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we'd have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep, meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it.
beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep, beep, beep. And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong three times, it automatically assumes you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice. Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you? And I go, hey, is Mike there? That's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time. So, Mike picks up. Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm? Who is this? It's James. What's the passcode? What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question? I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code. Yeah, we changed it. It's the last four digits of your social security number. Oh, okay, thanks, Mike. I don't know my social security number. So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would like make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job? But other than that, she was cool. She watches my videos and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't like empty all the time. Okay. And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or we had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was that other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just going to go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved marble, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual. And I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted. And the boss lady puts some bacon on paper, and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that
Puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay, and
I love you.
You got the wrong number. I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing, and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket, because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at internet stuff, which backfired horribly. So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2. I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it. And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me thinking I was someone else and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway. That's right, another Subway story. Hashtag Subway 4. It wasn't good enough to be in the other three. So, it was 5 minutes until closing and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say, thank you for calling Subway, how may I help you? I was supposed to say, this is James, how may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name. Idiot. Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it alright if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding, I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said, I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes, so you'll get gas, then are you gonna stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma? Because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not, that's, you have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now, unless she did. So I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning. and I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly. Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
What?
I said, you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said, I think you have the wrong number. Okay, goodbye.
No, 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 I got the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all, maybe there's something else going on, maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me.
Hold it, I've heard of it, Vance.
Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking and I could actually understand her and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kind of hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me. I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos. Then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.